Fire Chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
St. Dominic wrote, "A man who governs his passion is the master of the world. We must either command them or be enslaved by them. It is better to be the hammer than the anvil." Merciful Father, you know we are tired, and at this time of the year our patience gets thin and our frustrations increase. So help us govern our passions so what we say is kind and conveys the meaning that we are attempting to do here. May we deal fairly and openly with one another and work the work you would have us complete. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Call the roll.
Senators Barnetts, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Lager, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Nadler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Smith, Scott, Shields, Schumeyer, Smith, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright-Jones.
The quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 70th day, Wednesday, May 13th, 2009. The Senate met pursuant...
Senator from St. Francois. You've heard the motion. As many as argue opinion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. The Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, could you go to calendar House bills on third reading, formal House Bill number 69, Senator from Green.
House bills for third reading, the formal calendar, House Bill 69, the Senator from Green.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 69 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
You heard the motion. As many as argue opinion shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before us.
Mr. President, I move for adoption of the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 69. Mr. President, this bill is using up some of the unused tax credits that we have in the adoption fund. It's not new money at all. A couple of years ago, we had extra money left in the Missouri adoption fund, which go to special needs children, and we took that unused money and said that the CASA, the child advocacy centers, and the crisis nurseries could divide that money equally and have up to 50% tax credit for that money. There were standards set for it for the organizations. Any organization that fits to these tax credits are either licensed or contracted or funded by the state. And then any money left over goes over into international adoptions. We did have money left over and had all of these national adoptions taken care of and still had money left. So the representative that has this bill would like to use what's left of that money, in other words, the fourth agency, which would be the adoption resource centers. That's kind of a new idea. The substitute, all it is for the first time in statutes, we define what an adoption resource center is, what they have to do to qualify. These tax credits are working very well. Social services decides if they qualify and sends them a notice, and then they have a voucher to go to revenue, and it's working very well. They're just now getting started as groups to realize they have this money. But we think there's going to be plenty for this fourth group to be able to receive these tax credits. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Does any senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 8th.
I'd like to inquire.
This senator from Green yield.
Yes, I do.
Yield,
good morning.
You may inquire.
Good morning, Senator.
Came early this morning, didn't it?
Well, yeah, it sure did. Came real early. Senator, you said the magic two words, tax credits.
I know. I was afraid you'd worry about that. These are you remember quite several years ago, we had one fund for taking care of special needs children in Missouri. And we divided that a few years ago. In fact, it was my legislation that did that into two funds. The in Missouri tax credits and the out of Missouri tax credits. And by definition, any child overseas, international adoptions, becomes special needs. So we said first we're going to reserve some of this money for Missouri children, and if there's money left over, it'll roll into the international. And then, I think it was 2 years ago, I presented to this body what we call the Children in Crisis Bill, that there was money left even after the international adoption, and we wanted to use that for the same kind of thing that the money was intended for, which are the crisis nurseries, the Children in Crisis centers, the Child Advocacy Centers, and CASA. So that is starting to work really well. People are beginning to help support those organizations. And the system is working very efficiently through social service and through revenue. So it's not new money. It's money that's always been set aside.
Okay, what's your number, Senator? What's
the number of the money?
No, the House bill number.
Oh, I'm sorry. House Bill 69, Senator.
Okay.
The substitute, all it does is, because we're adding this fourth one, be qualified after the other three have received all the tax credits that they're going to be able to, we needed to define the adoption resource centers. And so there are two of them that go by that title in Missouri. I think one in Kansas City and one in St. Louis. But there are some resource centers around the state that probably will come to qualify for this. And the guidelines are all set by social services. I went to them with it, and it seems to be working very, very well to utilize this money, not new money, and not money that we could use for anything else, but utilize it for Missouri children, particularly those at risk.
Okay, what's your there? So you say there's no new money. Is there new tax credit?
No, no. Well, okay. There is. It lets another group have any of the money that is left after the others. To get their tax credit.
Yeah, that's kind of the older, because I've heard the dairy guys said this too. Okay,
yeah.
There's this tax credit, it's already out there, it's just not being fully utilized. So my question are there tax credits now not being redeemed that will be redeemed and there will be a claim on the state's budget if we pass this?
Well, there's a cap on it. You know, we have a $2 million cap in Missouri adoption money, and we have the $2 million cap of international. Now, what happened this past year, all three of these groups received their money, and then in the statutes, in the bill I got passed, it rolls over to the international. We filled all of those needs and still had, I think, around $600,000 left in that fund.
Okay, then is the answer to my question yes?
Well,
here's my question.
Okay.
Okay. If we pass this, will there be a reduction in the state's tax revenue because there are tax credits that are now authorized but not being redeemed?
Well, this fund is set aside for that. It is not like it's set aside for tax credits. This fund is set aside for Missouri adoption.
Okay. Is there a portion of this fund that is lapsing every year, coming back into the budget?
I think so, isn't it? I would imagine so.
Yeah, because we really wouldn't need the bill, would we?
No.
If a portion of the fund wasn't lapsing.
That's right.
Okay, I just want my colleagues to understand that this is a, just it's in fairness, this is a vote to further cut the state's revenue. Okay? It is, Senator, unless I'm misunderstanding. Right now, there are tax credits that are not being redeemed. And therefore, that money is coming into the state budget.
Well,
this is a way in which we can set the tax credit program up to allow more aggressive redemptions, therefore a reduction in the state's revenue. So we just need to understand. Here's, you know, this is the basic, Senator, let me finish my thought if I could. Okay?
Yeah.
Here's the basic issue with tax credits. We all kind of feel like we're voting funny money. But the reality is we're voting to give a dollar bill to somebody, and by virtue of giving that dollar bill to somebody, in this case the people who adopt children, which they're a worthy group, and that's going to be a dollar bill that we don't have to spend on special needs children in the budget, our House Bill 2, higher ed, any of the other priorities. So I just want to make sure we get our vocabulary right, because it would be easy to cast a yes vote here thinking that nobody's ox gets gored. But the truth of the matter is that if you have a tax credit, this is what I said to the dairy guys when they came in, hey, it's a tax credit that's already on the books. But it was a tax credit that was not being redeemed. And therefore, it was going to be a reduction in the state's revenue. And right now, our state's revenue is doing this. This year, we took in 4% less than we did last year. And the problem is we may take in the next budget year less than that. And so as we continue year after year to vote to take more and more revenue off the books, say we're not collecting that, we need to understand that it has a corresponding downstream effect. And this bill will as well.
Well, Senator, another way of looking at this money will not actually go back into the state funds. This money will roll over into international adoptions. And the reason we put it in two funds in the first place is because the international adoptions were gobbling up all the funds, and there was nothing left for the in Missouri children. And also, not only would it just roll over to international adoptions, and the more is available, the more of those you're going to have, because that's been kind of a big business. And the whole effort of this was to keep money in Missouri to serve those at-risk children. And also these organizations that we are funding out of this that we held back for in Missouri children are organizations that the state's been doing, the state does funding for anyway. And this will take a little of that burden off.
Okay, well, I would just warn my colleagues that, you know, with every little vote that we take here to take revenue off the books, this is another one, we there's a downstream corresponding net effect.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to go take the perilous position, because I know I'll probably be attacked at church. And by the way, everybody needs to be forewarned. I'm sure everybody in here knows. I mean, the homeschoolers are coming with pitchforks today. I don't know. Somebody did something on some house bill. And Lord help us, because today's going to be a fun day. They are coming with pitchforks today. And we didn't even do it over here. I don't know. Over in the house, they added something over there. But we are voting vote by vote to take revenue off the books. And this is another one. And who in the world's going to vote against the parents that adopt children? Well, I am today going to vote. And that just shows the fact that my political career is coming to an abrupt end.
I would say, Senator, but, I appreciate it.
But, I mean, it's these well-meaning, who could be against people who adopt? I just think that we really shouldn't be adding any more tax credits until we sit back and evaluate the overall net effect of all of our tax credits.
Senator, I understand your thinking, but I don't think it's going to go back in the revenue. I think it's going to go to international adoption because that's what the law says it will
do. Well, when you turned to Reggie and you asked whether money is lapsing every year and the answer was yes, that told me everything
well,
I needed to know.
One of the reasons...
Because it's not going to lapse now. One of the reasons they're coming to you and asking you to sponsor this legislation is because they want more aggressive redemption of the tax credits. More people will have access to the tax credits than did before.
I think it'll be different people, not necessarily more.
Thank
people.
You.
Another senator wish to be heard. The senator from the 14th.
I'd like to inquire the senator from Green, please.
Does the senator yield?
Yes,
proceed.
I do. Thank you very much, Senator. Senator, I think I need to maybe help in the clarification of this. I don't know if I'm going to clarify. I'm going to confuse. That's why I'm going to kind of ask you questions.
Okay.
Right now, do we have two pots of money or do we have three pots of money?
Two.
We have two pots of money.
Yes.
One is for adoptions overseas. The other is for the adoption of Missouri children.
At-risk children.
At-risk children. Yeah,
and
kind of like the children that we talked about
Senator,
last night.
All children overseas, by definition,
all children overseas because
special needs.
They're
but
considered
that's
special
not
needs.
True in Missouri.
So just because they're overseas, they're considered special
yes.
needs.
Yes.
Okay. Right now, people have redeemed what on each one of those pots of money.
Oh.
Not an amount. Just have we?
They haven't all been redeemed.
They have not all been redeemed.
No. And,
okay.
And our statute says they will roll over into international adoption.
So the first people that we take care of are Missouri children.
In the one pot and then the first people in the international. Both of them we take care of at the same time.
Okay. So if we don't have, or we have more money in Missouri, in other words, people in Missouri are not taking advantage of this, then that means that money rolls over to the international pot. Is
one of
right?
the problems we have, Senator, there it's so much harder, and that's the reason we have that fund there. It's so much harder to get special needs children adopted.
And, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And so that's
you would think here in this state that we don't have that problem, Senator, but go ahead on. I digress.
Yeah. And so what we have done is say, okay, there are some support systems out there for children in crisis. Remember,
okay.
That's what we call
yes.
the bill. And so rather than rolling this money over to going overseas and doing it, and they used to spend, one of the senators wanted to take the ceiling flare off.
Correct.
And that just seems to be an area that gobbles up funds at the international. And those are fine. But first we need to provide those services.
Senator, I could not agree with you more. We need to take care of the children
yeah.
in Missouri. That's what we espouse to do each and every day. We spent a long time last night figuring out what we're going to do with the unborn children. If this is what children happen, if they're born with special needs or something, then this helps that family. Is that correct?
That's right. And Senator, I don't believe any of that money that is not used would go back into general revenue. That money will go over to international adoption by law. And
so we're not saving anything in terms of general revenue. That's what you're saying.
No.
It's going to be spent. The question is whether it's spent here in Missouri or whether it's spent in Russia or China or Bangladesh or wherever.
You said it very well, Senator.
Is that right? Thank you, Senator. Thank you. Madam President.
Woo, Lord. Thank you.
You need to turn your mic on.
Helpful. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Does any other senator seek to be heard?
Madam President.
Senator from Kate.
Thank you to inquire the senator from Green.
Do you yield, Senator?
Yes, I do.
Proceed.
Senator, we're going to be on tax credits probably all day long, so we might as well start with your bill. Where we are looking on tax credits, jobs bills, whatever we want to call it, I guess the fiscal hawks of the Missouri Senate are going to let your tax credit go, but don't want to let any other of them go. So my question would be, how much is annually spent on these adoption resource center tax credits?
I think right now they're just getting started, frankly, in in using these as these costs.
Is it a capped program?
Yes.
The cap?
It's a $2 million cap for...
And how much was utilized last year?
I think we had $600,000 last.
So there's a $2 million cap. You only use $600,000. So what you're trying to do is take $1.4 million and spend it someplace else.
That's what I said. Oh.
So there's a $2 million cap.
My person is suggesting you heard it differently or I wasn't clear. We had $600,000 left in that roll over
left.
Into international. Yes.
Okay, so you had $600,000 that was left out of the $2 million. So that means you spent $1.4 million.
Yeah.
And then you said, where did the other $600,000 go?
I said it will go over for more international adoption because
you're broadening the category.
No, because the statute says any money left over after the at-risk children are adopted and these children in crisis support systems that help get them adopted and help take care of our children in crisis, any money not spent by them will then go over into international adoption.
That's what the statute says. I'm asking what current law is.
That is a law.
Okay. Then why isn't that happening without your bill?
It is happening, but I don't.
Well, then we don't need your bill.
No, I don't want to send any. I don't want to send any money over, additional money above that $2 million to international adoptions until we fund the kinds of things that we need to support special needs children in Missouri.
Okay, then I'm confused. Where is the current law today? What
the
is
current
the current
law
today?
Today says that there are two pots of money, and we have big discussions.
There's
about
two pots of money or two tax credits?
No, two pots of money.
So we
Absolutely.
General revenue dollars that we allocate.
Yes, I assume so, yeah. It's $4 million, which has been...
Of general revenue
yes.
dollars. It doesn't go through a tax credit. It's just a line item in the budget. I mean, you serve on a program.
Well, it always has. I mean, since they set it up, it's always... Well, not anymore. But since they set it up, they've always been using it. But what happened, we had one pot of money to start with, and it was for both.
Before you go, when you say pot of money, is it general revenue or is it a tax credit that you're calling a pot of money?
It's a tax credit.
Okay, so it's a tax. You
yes.
have an authorization authority of a tax credit.
Yes, yes.
All right, so there's two authorizations of authority
yes.
to this tax credit.
Yeah, and there was one and we divided.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Well, there was one large tax credit for all adoptions in Missouri, out of Missouri, internationally. And the international adoptions were taking a huge amount of it because it's so much harder to get people to adopt children in Missouri, special needs children. And so several of us talked about it, that rather than spending, and they, you know, it's a big business. I mean, I'm glad they're doing adoptions, but it's a big business. They pay their expenses to go and adopt these children. I hated to see all that money going internationally when we have some needs for children in Missouri. So that's when we put it into two pots. And we said, okay, first we're going to take care in this pot, this half of it, the needs of the children in Missouri. What we don't spend will go to international adoptions, and they can spend it. So it doesn't go back in general revenue.
It doesn't go back into general revenue.
Well, that's not what he's asking. Well, it goes in the tax credit fund to fund international abortion.
Okay.
International adoption.
Okay. Just so we're...
Now, we're not setting any of this up now, Senator. None of this is already set. It's been set. These three groups are receiving it before it's sent to the international adoption. So that we did a couple of years ago. They're just now starting to utilize this. And so more and more of this money stays in Missouri for at-risk kinds of services for children. So what they're asking for is can this fourth group use some of it for adoption resource services Before it goes into the international, goes over to the international.
Okay. So who are these new people that you're going to make eligible for a 50% verified contribution to an eligible agency?
Yeah, and it comes after these other three groups have already used the money they're going to use.
But before the international adoption.
But before the international, yes.
So basically we're not going to support international adoption.
Well, they already start with $2 million.
International adoption gets $2 million?
Yes.
And Missouri domestic adoption gets $2 million
in tax credits? Yes, and what isn't used by law goes over to add more to the international adoption.
So if domestic doesn't use all of their authorization, then that goes to international, and if international doesn't use all of its authorization, that goes to domestic?
No, that doesn't happen. No, it all goes over to international.
But there's two funds right now that are...
We set up those two funds, about 4 years ago.
I mean, Catherine Hanaway did it right before she adopted Jack, her son from
not
Eastern.
The separate funds. We did that.
Well, we authorized the international tax credit.
Yes, but what we did a few years ago in this body, because it was my piece of legislation, is I didn't want to see so much money, a disproportionate amount, going out of the country. I wanted it to stay in Missouri, and several of us talked about it and wanted it. So we said, we're going to divide this money up front, and you can only use up to this amount unless there's some left over from this other fund. And so they are separated, and each uses the funds, but when the international funds are almost always used. In fact, they used to take practically everything, but now these other groups are starting to use it. But it's not a new fund, and it's not a fund where the money will go back into general revenue. It will go to international adoption.
And it's always consumed in the international adoption.
It was before, and even the part we set aside for children in Missouri, they were using all of that. Right now, there are not quite as many requests for the international adoption. I frankly suspect it's because the word got out that they didn't have unlimited sources in that, and they're not pushing that as much, the international.
I'm trying to see where you have a cap on this tax credit.
Okay. The cap is the $2 million cap in Missouri.
But I don't see that anywhere in your bill. Is
well,
that
it's already in statute.
And what I'm saying is it's in a section of statute that is not contained in your bill that you have before in that section?
I really don't know. Because what this bill does is add this one group of people, Adoption Resource Center.
I think I'm seeing it now. I see the word.
So I think they haven't printed up the whole bill. But these tax credits, the $4 million has been around for years. And now we've put it a couple, 3 years ago, into $2 million and $2 million, so that we had enough money for the services in Missouri.
Okay. And what is now... With the definition, you're saying an adoption resource center.
Yes.
Is that like an agency I hire if I want to adopt somebody?
Yes, and I believe the two that exist now are contracted by the state. Because anybody who
So are those like non-for-profits? Are they for-profit?
No.
Are they state government-run entities?
Well, I think the more important thing, Senator, I'm not avoiding your question, but I think the more important thing is to realize that we are defining it of what they are and who gets that, who has a chance at that money after everybody else has used it.
So they don't exist today?
Yeah, there are two of them do.
Two of them exist today.
A note was handed me, subsection 4 of section 135.327.
Okay. And it says that these will have crisis intervention and counseling services? So it's just not adoption.
It's not adoption. It's a resource center for, and we expect to have, hope to have a few more of those. It's a resource center for helping children get adopted for training and counseling for children at risk. There's a number of things that
does. So you train kids to be more suitable for adoption?
No, the adopting parents.
The adopting parents are trained, and then they have intervention and or counseling services?
That's one of the many things they provide. Let me see if I can suggest to you some of the things that they provide. They provide information and referral information.
So is that like, I mean, what I'm trying to understand is a crisis intervention or counseling services, is that you've adopted a kid and you're having buyer's remorse
the
and you go there?
Intervention, it isn't crisis intervention. There's what we're already giving to, you know, CASA, what CASA does.
So we already give CASA tax credits.
Yes, these same tax
so
credits.
You're
CASA,
running...
CASA is one organization that qualifies for the tax credit. What's left in Missouri adoption? Okay, CASA qualifies. The Children's Crisis Nursery, which are just beginning to spring up, qualify, and that's where if you are having a domestic fight or an automobile accident and the parents are in the hospital or any time when children need a temporary place to stay and they have a limit of how many days they can stay there as a safe haven kind of thing. And then the third one is the Child Advocacy Center, and that's where they take children to you can interview them without their being in a police setting for sexual abuse and you probably have even visited some of those. There, we have several of those around.
Okay, so you're just, and I'm trying to understand this. There's $4 million out there.
Yes.
You're just adding another entity that can take of that $4
million. Up to $2 million is what I'm adding. I'm adding it, this other entity before it rolls over to international.
Okay. So the only net change would be, in theory, not as much would roll over to international adoption.
No, there wouldn't, if they're using it.
No, there wouldn't, or yes, you agree with my statement?
I agree with your statement.
Okay.
In theory, not as much would roll over.
Okay. So, in any event, it's just about, historically speaking, 600,000?
Well, right now, I expect that's going to get used up as these organizations learn how to let people know they can make the contribution.
And all you're doing is putting this new entity at the front of the line.
As one of them, yeah. Well, actually, the fourth down.
Well,
the line.
How do they I mean, there is still a rank order. It goes boom, boom,
the
boom.
The first three are on equal status. And the fourth
status.
One would be if there's money left over before it rolls over, they are able to take.
So when do they do the rollover? I mean, how do they know if they're going to have money or
Senator,
not?
I need to speak to the to Madam President. Now, who's up there? Mr. President?
Yes, Senator.
Madam President, excuse me, I heard your voice. Would you put this on the informal calendar?
Please place the bill on the informal calendar, Senator from St. Francis.
Change the order of business to Senate bills, third reading on the informal calendar. House bills, rather, third reading with Senate committee substitute on the informal calendar, and that is House Bill number 1075. Change the order, please.
The order of business is House bills for third reading and informal calendar. House Bill 1075, Senator from Franklin.
Madam President, I move that House Bill 1075 be brought before the body for third reading.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Franklin. All that believe that motion should prevail, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion appears to carry. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it, Senator from Franklin.
Now, Madam President, I move that House Bill 1075 be third read and finally passed, and I would also move for the adoption of the Senate to be substituted. I saw Perry going for you, and I knew I was going there. Anyway, this, for everybody's knowledge, this, as you well know, this is the unemployment compensation bill. The Senate committee substitute is actually exactly the same as how Senate Bill 495, which we passed out of this body earlier this year. The House had, when it came over here, the House had some other amendments. We preferred to strip them off and start all over again. I know there's going to be some amendments offered here. One of them I'm fine with. I think the business groups have signed off, the Senator from 11th. It's the one that's been dropped here from the Senator from 13th. We're going to have to vet this out because we need to discuss that a little bit. But anyway, I would be glad to entertain any questions, if not, I renew the motion.
The Senator has moved the adoption of the Senate committee substitute. Does anyone wish to be heard?
No.
Senator from the 11th.
Madam President, may I briefly inquire of the Senator from Franklin?
Senator from Franklin. Senator from Franklin, do you yield?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am.
Proceed.
Yes, Madam President.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator, I have talked to you extensively about this amendment, and I haven't offered yet. I'm about to. Back in late January or February, the President Pro Tem of the Senate, leaders of the House, I believe the Lieutenant Governor, all expressed a very genuine concern about federal stimulus dollars, that we did not want to take money and spend it on continuing obligations. And I believe that they were correct. As a matter of fact, Senator, my own staff, in working with the Senator from the Second on the federal stimulus dollars, actually had recommended that to him about the unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
However, the division came to both, I believe, you and I, and had come up with a plan that would allow the state to receive $133 million for our unemployment, and that number was 242,000 this morning, Missourians, and that for the provision would allow us to sunset. We would not kick in the benefits until approved by the U.S. Department of Labor, and then that this provision would sunset when the money was gone,
yes.
And that there was the ability to do that. And I suggested and have in my hand, Senator, a letter from Governor Nixon stating that not only by passage of this, which does expire, that he would not pass on this cost and would not seek to renew this obligation which might be put on Missouri businesses. Associated Industries, the Missouri Chamber, I believe, have indicated to you and I that they are fine with this proposal as long as it does not result in an obligation. The amendment I'm going to offer sunsets it in the way that the feds will allow us to do that, and in the process we will be able to receive $133 million by adopting some of the expansions of unemployment. It will automatically expire. But I just wanted to, is that your understanding?
That's exactly my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Senator. Madam President?
Senator from the 11th?
I have an amendment.
Has it been distributed?
Madam President, it was distributed last night. I would seek a waiver of the reading.
Would you send the amendment up, please?
And Madam President, I would move for the adoption of the amendment.
Since it has been distributed, it will not have to be read. The Senator has moved for the adoption of the amendment. Does anyone recognize?
Madam President, if I could, I would like to explain the amendment just briefly, even
yes.
Though I had the inquiry from Senator. Thank you, Madam President. Senators, this amendment will allow us in the state of Missouri to receive $133 million. And to those who are concerned about federal stimulus dollars, this amendment will expire these provisions and will not go into effect until approved by, we will not receive the money until it is approved by the U.S. Department of Labor. It will then expire. So the genuine concern that the senator from Second and others have expressed, and that is why the business community has come on board. But in this time of unemployment, this will allow us to accept this $133 million as part of the Recovery Act to expand unemployment benefits and expand the coverage of unemployment in this time of recession, and that it will automatically sunset when the funds are depleted. So we are not creating a continuing obligation, and I, as I mentioned, it was a genuine concern of the President Pro Tem of this body, the Lieutenant Governor, and both parties expressed this concern back in February, but much to the credit of the Department and Governor Nixon, they have worked out a system that works, that has the support of business groups, as they now understand that it will not be a continuing obligation on them when the money is used. So with that, I'll be happy to yield to any questions.
Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator from the 11th.
I close, Madam President.
Thank you. All those in favor, no, discussion on that motion first. Close, no. All those in favor of the motion prevailing, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the motion of the senator from the 11th. Senator from the 13th.
Madam President.
What reason do you
have? I have amendment.
Has it been distributed?
Yes, it's been distributed. I ask for a waiver of the reading.
Senator from the 13th.
Move for the adoption of the amendment.
Hearing no objection on the reading of the amendment, you're recognized.
Yes. Madam President, I move for the adoption of the amendment. This changes currently what's happening is employers report their W-2 information to Social Security. This, and they have in the law that it's on magnetic tape or diskette. It says that it will now be done in an electronic format, and it limits it to 50 or more workers, so employers under that would not have to. And it also says that that information to the Social Security also goes to the Director of Revenue.
Does anyone desire to be heard on the motion from Senator from the 13th? Senator from Franklin.
To speak on the amendment.
Proceed.
Thank you. I've talked to the Senator from the 13th. I remember this amendment. I am perfectly fine with it, and I think it's okay. So ask the body to approve it.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the motion? Senator from Clay.
Yes, to inquire the senator from the 13th.
Do you yield?
Yes, I do.
Tell me what you're doing again.
Do you have the amendment?
I don't.
It's on. Could you maybe get it from your next-door neighbor?
Can I get it from my next-door neighbor? Thank you.
Okay, if you look at subsection 2, which is current law, I'm bracketing out required to report these copies to Social Security, and I am putting instead with 50 or more workers, and that they report this information to the Director of Revenue.
Okay. So as I understand it, this is actually taking some paperwork off of smaller businesses?
I do sometimes assist business groups.
I think that's a yes.
Oh. I haven't received the award yet, though.
Okay, well, that was my main concern. I just
if you want to nominate me, I would be more than happy to accept the nomination.
Oh, well, I may have to nominate you. But maybe another day. Okay, Senator, thank you very much for the inquiry.
Any other senator desire to be heard on the motion from the senator from the 13th? Seeing none, Senator from the 13th, you're recognized to close.
In closing, I would just like to make the Senator from the Fighting 26 aware that I appreciate his support of my amendment, but I hope he doesn't take offense that I will be against his amendment in another piece of legislation. With that, I close.
The Senator from the 13th has moved amendment number 2. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion has, the ayes appear to have it, the ayes do have it. The amendment is adopted. Senator from Franklin. Does any other senator desire to be heard on the bill? Seeing none, Senator from Franklin.
Okay, Madam President, before I close, I want to thank everybody. I'm going to make a statement. I had intended to hold this bill kind of as leverage against 376 to try to get it passed. It appears that there is no commitment from the House that they're going to. They may do it, but I assume that they're probably going to kill 376. In the spirit of what is right and what is wrong, this bill, passing this bill, is the right thing to do. If I sit on it and use it as leverage, that's not right. There's a lot of employers, a lot of people that depending on this, besides the governor's office and everything else. But there's other one gentleman that from St. Louis has worked very, very hard on this. That's Ray Dobbs from Kirkwood Contracting. And he's the guy that sits apparently on the commission that came up with the idea and kind of forged the compromise that we even had this bill to begin with. And I can't look him in the eye and put the screws to him. So the only thing I will say is that for the right thing to do, this is the right thing to do to pass. With that, Madam President, I close.
The Senator has been recognized to close on the Senate Committee substitute. All those in favor that the motion shall prevail, say aye. All those opposed, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Franklin, you're recognized to close.
Now, Madam President, I move that Senate Committee substitute for House Committee substitute for House Bill 1075 be third read and finally passed.
Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Kate.
Thank you, Madam President.
For what reason do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from the 26th.
Senator from the 26th, do you yield?
Sure.
Thank you very much, Senator. I appreciate it. I wanted you to close so you know we're not offering amendments. We're not trying to hold anything. You're closed. I just wanted to ask exactly where the House was, what the Senate changed, and during the debate of all the stimulus money and some of the stimulus enhancements that the state of Missouri is eligible to, if we would change our unemployment compensation fund, we could get temporary bonus money, and I didn't know if you were making all of those changes in as well.
I haven't heard the latest, Senator, where the House is. Some of the groups out in the hallway, on the original bill, I think the House was fine, okay? I think on the amendment that the Senator from the 11th has offered,
right.
I think they were originally opposed to that, but now I was told out in the hallway that they are no longer opposed, but I can't honestly tell you that because I have not spoken to the leadership to tell you that they are or they aren't. I haven't asked that question. Now, the groups out in the hallway say that they have, I think, what they've indicated to me, that they have softened, but I'm not going to lie to you. I'm just going to tell you what I know, and what I know is I don't know.
I understand. So you're doing the best you can to put a craft bill together that you think is best, and then if the House wants to take it, they can take it.
Senator, it's called when you punt, you punt. We're going to punt. And
okay. So there's no deal worked out beforehand where they're going to take up this version.
No, I think the business, the fact that the business groups AIM and the chamber are fine with the amendment that the senator from the 11th is tacked on.
Senator from the 11th did?
Yes.
And then the senator from the 13th?
And there's a commitment from the governor in a letter that says that he's, that it's just a one-year deal, and you know, once it's over, it's over. So we're not going to tax small businesses.
Okay.
I think that appeases it. But I can honestly tell you what's going to happen over there. I don't know.
Is that what the senator from the 11th Amendment did, was avail ourselves of it for 1 year, and we're quite confident that the federal government's going to let us game the system where we increase our benefits for a year and then move them back down?
From the letters that I had had, or the information that I have had, Department of Labor had indicated, that...
The U.S. Department or the state?
U.S. Department. No, the U.S. Department of Labor had indicated that we could cut it off. We can put a sunset and not be penalized. That's
with no clawback provisions or anything else.
That's
like
what
that.
I understand.
And that was the senator.
That's the information I got.
And that was the senator from the 11th amendment.
Yes.
That did that. And then otherwise, all we're really doing in your bill, Senator, is we're increasing the bonding authority so that we bond money. And we pay that back with bonding, because bonding is cheaper than borrowing from the federal government.
The 2 years. Yeah, the 2 years.
Right.
Just removes the cap. And
right.
We added the senator from the 13th Amendment that had to do with, actually, it went back to an executive order that Governor Blunt had issued regarding, I think, reporting of health insurance or something. I'm still not totally. He better explain it than I can. But anyway, it ties into that executive order that where everybody communicates, and that's all we've done.
I understand fully and appreciate that, but I am understanding the basis of when our unemployment compensation fund. I don't know if this is the right word. Is insolvent.
Solvent.
We have more. Cost than we have there, we either borrow it from the federal government or we tax our employers or we enable them to bond and put money in. And as I understand it, the analysis that has been made by you and others in this committee is it's cheaper to bond and borrow the money than to borrow it from the federal government or to raise contribution rates on employers. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes, and the borrowing is only for 2 years, but it's at no interest.
Sure.
Yeah.
So we're not paying any interest by bonding.
No, not on that. Not during that 2 year period.
Oh, but we'll have to pay it later.
Yes.
And even though we are authorizing bonding, it's still a responsibility of the companies to pay off those bonds, not the state of Missouri, or is now that going to go in House Bill 1?
I would assume that, and Senator, I am not a unemployment expert, okay?
Right.
But I would assume that the bonding, that state borrows the money. I mean, that's on us. I would assume that.
Okay, so rather than raise the contribution rates of employers to fund an insolvent unemployment compensation system, we're just going to let them run up the credit card of the state, and then the taxpayers are going to pay that off in House Bill 1.
I don't know what else can be done. I mean, this was the original 495. The original Senate Committee substitute was the original 495 that I passed out of here.
Okay. And I understand that, and that's fair. But I'm sort of like the senator from 13.
Senator, you're pretty sharp minded. You know, understand this a lot more than I do. Okay.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure you do. But anyway, at least the as much as I know, we are going to bond for 2 years at no interest.
Okay, and I appreciate that, Senator. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Madam President.
Senator from K.
If I could inquire the senior senator from St. Charles, senator from the second.
Senator from the second, do you yield?
I yield.
Proceed.
Senator,
so what do you think?
I had serious heartburn about this, but I was given sufficient information that this does limit it just to the 2 years. But
okay, you're talking about the senator from the 11th
right.
Amendment.
Right, but on the bonding part, this is allowing us to go ahead and just to continue to raise the cap. So it was an arbitrary cap that was put on a long time ago, and it was pretty much the only option we have. But then it would be up to the fund, which is paid in by the business, the taxes the businesses pay, would have to be paying that back. But
okay,
the option,
so the fund is
right.
is the obligor
right.
of the bonds, not
right.
the Missouri taxpayer.
And the problem with
so it won't
could
show
have
up
borrowed
the
money
one.
From the federal government in a different way through some Title 12 funds, but we would have lost our FUTA tax credit, which would have been a
right.
billion-dollar tax
right.
increase
right.
on businesses.
Right.
So
right.
the bond, his underlying bill is very, very good.
Right.
But it's, again, it's not going to get us out of the woods. But I did want to point out to you that on the Senator from the 11th Amendment,
okay.
That make no mistake, the federal government wants these benefits to continue on after 2 years.
Absolutely.
Because I had was wanting.
I mean, that's when you chaired the Stimulus and Stabilization
right.
Committee that the Senator from Buchanan appointed both of us on. It was pushed heavily, and it was my understanding there that once you changed, you couldn't
right.
change back.
Well, this is the point that I had talked to the department in the governor's office. It was on page 3 of his amendment. Where it talks about the money was going to be expiring. It says, the provisions of this section shall be subject to renewal in the second regular session of the 95th General Assembly. If not renewed, the provisions of this section shall expire once the funds provided under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 are expended or as provided in the section. So that's where they're saying the money is going to, we're going to have to reel these back in unless we reapprove it. So I had the question, well, why do we need that first sentence? Why do we say we need to be renewing it? Why shouldn't it just say the provisions of this section shall expire once the funds provided under the stimulus plan are expended? And I was told that the federal government wouldn't allow that because they wouldn't allow any language that would put an end date on this money unless we could put in something that we could renew it. So it's very clear that the federal government, and we will be inundated next year with people coming up, and they're going to parade everybody up in front of us, say, you need to renew this, and they'll have every story in the world why we need to continue these benefits, even though we would have to pay them ourselves. And even the Department of Labor and Industrial Relations said, if we accept a portion of this money, we get $44 million one-time money. But it's going to be a $60 million increase on businesses every single year. So I am going to look to you and myself and my other colleagues that next year when they want to make these permanent and make our businesses pay for them, that we're going to have to stand together and say, no, the agreement was just until the funds run out from the stimulus plan, no more, and we're just going to have to stand up to all the pressure that's going to be applied to us to try to make these changes permanent and put it on the backs of the employer.
Well, that just does not sound wise to even put your – I mean, what is the – I, Senator, myself, personally, I try to look at things net positive versus net negative. With what you just said, what tips the scale in your mind to say this bill with this senator from the 11th Amendment is still a net positive?
Because they will have to come through me and us to get this renewed permanently next year. And I know I'll be here.
But do you think this language really operates that way?
I think that it does operate that way.
So we write a positive sunset?
It has to be renewed.
We write a positive sunset, and we think that'll withstand a court challenge.
As from all the business groups and the leadership area I've talked to, they're comfortable with this. They think that this can be dealt with the way we want to deal with it next year.
I mean, I haven't had those conversations, and I take you at your word, Senator, but it seems, is the federal government that dumb that if we say if we don't renew, that's okay with them, but if we say it sunsets, that's not okay with them, and we're willing to take a $60 million a year gamble on symbolism over substance as it relates to this bill?
I'm just relating to you that my desire was to take that sentence out, and I was like, no, the stimulus plan says you can't do this. And that just showed me, though, that the federal government wants this to be permanent and we're going to have to deal with this next year. But enough people have said, no, this we can deal with this next year. We can take the money just for these 2 years. But I just wanted to make the body aware that we are on to this, we understand what will happen if we continue these on past this time, and to make everyone aware that they should be, this is just for this next year.
And, I mean, what do we get out of taking this money? I mean, what is it? This change, what do we get?
Oh, you get about $138 million in one pot and about another $60 million in another from the stimulus plan.
In direct unemployment compensation?
Yeah, and basically then it goes out into
the workers.
Extended benefits for a longer period of time.
Extended unemployment benefits for a longer period.
Yeah, basically you're extending the period of time.
Seems like it's a good time to be unemployed to me, Senator.
Well, I don't think it's ever a good time to be unemployed, but
now's the best of bad times to be unemployed.
Well, we'll just make sure that this is a temporary benefit. This way it was sold to us by the federal government. We're just going to make sure it's a temporary benefit when it comes next year.
And just so I understand, and then I'll let you sit down, and I appreciate you clarifying this. If it turns out that this operative section, where we write a positive sunset, and the federal government somehow lets that slide, they release all of this money, and we come back and we find out next year that the federal government wakes up like it usually does. It's a sleeping tiger. You know, it's kind of groggy when you ask it a question today, but then when you want to start changing something, all of a sudden it says, oh, well, that doesn't count. I hadn't had my coffee in the morning, which is the typical bureaucratic answer.
Right.
You asked me before I had my coffee, so that don't count. You can't rely on it. So if it doesn't work out the way everyone says, and the federal government says that a positively written sunset is just as bad as a regular written sunset, what happens? $60 million tax increase on our businesses annually?
I don't know if that would be the case, because if they were to come back and do a one-time clawback of that money, it would just probably go against the fund. But
and then we would have to borrow more money.
And then we probably
or,
would. But you know, this fund is going to it has problems.
I mean, it's not going to claw back from the employees that get this. I mean, the federal government's not going to take the unemployment benefits away.
Right. No, they'll
from
go after
the people
the, in the fund, or go after the state, which we'd have to fix. But
is there any way?
I would just think with all this, the way we can use stimulus money to meet a match over here on the federal, and then we can take the mm-hmm. stabilization money over here. We could probably just take the stabilization money from somewhere over here and meet this obligation over here. And you know, we need a flow chart where all this money is going and stuff.
I call it a snow globe. It's the federal stimulation and stabilization snow globe. If you don't like where the money's laying around, just pick it up, shake it real quick, and then it'll float wherever you need it to float. It's like one of those crazy eight deals where do I get the money for this? Turn it upside down, shake it, and it'll say yes, no, maybe. Ask me later.
Yeah.
You know, I guess on this right now, the eight-ball answering machine that we've got is ask me later, but we're going to go ahead and do it anyway.
I think it's more the outlook is good.
Outlook is good. That was one of the options. Does she like me? Does she like me not? Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Senator. And Mr. President, to inquire the Senator from the 11th.
The Senator from the 11th yield? He does. Proceed.
Senator, thank you. I'm sorry.
I appreciate the inquiry. You heard my inquiry with
yes.
the senator from the 26th
yes.
and the senator from St. Charles. Is there anything you think should be added that we didn't get right?
Just very briefly, the last part, 8 of my amendment.
Okay.
The provisions of this section shall not take effect, nor no benefits paid under this section, unless first certified by the United States Secretary of Labor. The practical effect is, to the question that you ask is, if this isn't approved by the feds, we don't get the money.
So my analogy of we're asking a question before they got their cup of coffee and we could get stuck, before they certify, they're going to have their cup of coffee.
Right.
And
we don't get a dime. If we're wrong, we're wrong.
Okay.
I don't think we are.
Okay.
I think that the federal government, through this process, my view of it is we're pumping $135 million
into the economy.
Quite frequent by extending benefits by the number of weeks, and that's an infusion of money into Missouri's economy.
Okay.
And so I think it's worth, I don't see the risk. It doesn't go in unless they approve it. Once they approve it, we have something that we can
and
work
through
on.
That.
And then, by the way, I also wanted to mention, I have a letter from Governor Nixon.
Okay.
In which he has met with.
Addressed to you personally?
No. It is addressed to a mutual friend of ours.
the Honorable Ron Richards, Speaker of the Missouri House.
Okay.
And also to the President Pro Tem of this body.
Okay.
And I
and we didn't get CC.
Well, I will be happy to give you a copy of this. What I did is, Senator, honestly,
right.
this was my suggestion so that there was no doubt. AIM and the Missouri Chamber have come on board with this,
okay.
or at least don't oppose it. If I don't know if you were in the chamber. I don't want to belabor this.
But yeah, no, I'm not trying to belabor.
But it's an important issue. I did say that I agree absolutely with the Senator from 2nd, Lieutenant Governor, and the President Pro Tem, and I don't know if you were at that press conference, when there was original
I don't get invited to those.
When there was an original opposition to the unemployment funds.
Okay.
In fact, my own staff, we sent a memo to the Senator from 2nd Stimulus Committee, and my own staff, Don Thalhuber and Chris Shappy, agreed that the way unemployment, as we understood it back in January from the federal government, it didn't make sense for us to take it and then put this on Missouri businesses 2 years later. Since that time, many people have been working and have come up with a way that the feds, A, have to approve, and then it can be a strangely worded sunset.
You know, Senator, there are only 31 and a half hours left. I think you and I and the rest of the body is going to get to hear my voice a lot over that. And I just really, really appreciate you taking the time to explain that to me. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The Senator's desire to be heard on the bill. Hearing none. Senator, you're recognized. Close.
I close.
Senator from Franklin renews his motion. The Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 1075 be third read and placed upon its final passage. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1075, an act relating to unemployment compensation with an emergency clause. Senators Barnett, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Lager, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Nadler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumeyer, Smith, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from 7th. Senator from 7th votes aye. Senator from St. Francis. Senator from St. Francis votes aye. Senator from Stoddard. Senator from Stoddard votes aye. Senator from the 8th. Senator from the 8th votes aye. Senator... Senator from St. Clair. Senator from St. Clair votes aye. 34 ayes, 0 noes. The bill having received a constitutional majority is declared passed. Senator from Franklin on the emergency clause.
The adoption of the emergency clause.
Secretary, please call the roll on the emergency clause.
Senators Barnett, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Lager, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Nadler, Pierce, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumeyer, Smith, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from Buchanan. Senator from Buchanan votes aye. Senator from the 4th. Senator from the 4th votes aye. Senator from Green. Senator from Green votes aye. 34 ayes, 0 noes. You have adopted the emergency clause. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise to speak on a point of personal privilege.
Proceed. Sorry, Senator. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I am an individual who is usually slow to anger. I'm an individual who, when I am angry or offended, usually tries to take time to step back from the situation, let my head cool, and think from the other perspective about what may be behind what happened to bring me to a point of being angry. I've thought overnight and this morning about something that was said on this floor last night that angered me, that offended me, and that frankly disgusted me. And Mr. President, I'm still upset enough that I believe it is appropriate to say something about that on the floor of this Missouri Senate. I was personally offended last night by the remark uttered by the Senator from the 24th that the ethic of the men in this chamber is to be pro-life for our wives, pro-choice for our girlfriends. Mr. President, many of us in this chamber expressed real disapproval when that same Senator from the 24th was offended by another member of our body earlier this session. The Senator from the 24th is someone for whom I've had great respect, someone I consider a friend. She has spoken with passion and, I believe, integrity on a desire for equality between the genders. But then she makes a highly offensive, slanderous generalization about many members of this body. That was conduct, Mr. President, in my opinion, worthy of a remonstrance. But I'm going to limit my response to simply speaking on this floor because I don't want to make a personal record of that attack against the members of this body and our families. For most of us whose spouses cannot be here with us all week, Mr. President, that is an insult to them. It's an insult to our spouses who are assuming the duty of being a single parent during most of the week that we are up here, assuming the duties of running a household practically alone the majority of the week. Spouses who have embedded or imbued with us a heightened sense of trust that we will come up here during the work week and behave appropriately. It's an offense to the children that we leave at home who are being raised the majority of the week with only one parent. When the Senator from the 24th was offended by the remarks of another senator earlier this session, she said that she would not soon forget that offense. Mr. President, I can tell you that I will not soon, and I might not ever, forget the despicable, slanderous, and utterly hateful, unfounded, sleazy insult that was hurled against many of the members of this body last night. It was hurled against decent, committed families who make sacrifices together to serve the people of Missouri in this Senate.
Hearing no objection, let the journal show the tiling perfection motions were made and carried. Senator from St. Francis. Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
I'd like to speak on a point of personal privilege.
Senator from the 24th for a point of personal privilege.
Mr. President, I regret that the Senator from Lawrence didn't come speak to me before he made those comments on the floor. What I said last night, and the record will show, the ethic around here I came to this body 17 years ago and was instructed early on that that was the ethic around here. I find my comments defendable, and I regret that the Senator from Lawrence doesn't have the same perspective or understanding of what women around here go through when it comes to very personal issues involving their body, involving their reproductive choices. They who have to contend with this issue like no other man, who is involved in it, but never has to contend with it. So I regret that the Senator from Lawrence didn't speak to me, and I'm sorry that he chose not to. but I did not say this chamber specifically. I said around here. Thank you.
Senator from St. Francis.
I'm a little bit perturbed at the present time. You'll have to excuse me. I don't know, often get used to cheating in the Bible. Would you take us the order of business of House bills on third reading? Informal calendar, House Bill number 191.
House bills for third reading, informal calendar, House Bill 191. Senator from Franklin.
Move that House Bill 191 be brought forth from the informal calendar for third reading.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Franklin. As many of the opinion, the motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. Senator from Franklin.
Now, Mr. President, I think you need to...
Senator from Nottoway, for purpose, do you seek recognition?
Yes. Underlying substitute, I have to sit back. I have a new substitute that I'd like to sit forward.
Please send the substitute forward. Please send the previous substitute back.
Mr. President, the substitute has been distributed. I would request a waiver of the reading.
There are no objections, Senator. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. As everyone knows, we have had a challenging time moving an economic development / tax credit proposal through this chamber. And we also know that tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock when we go home, we will have either passed or failed to pass a tax credit reform measure that also includes a few job-creating or job-enticing tax credits. And as we've gone through this process, I know that I have spoken on this floor numerous times talking about what my goals were, my goals of creating budget certainty and predictability, my goals of ending the entitlement process, my goals of bringing accountability to the legislature so that we actually have the ability to make decisions around the levels of which tax credits are authorized, and then ultimately doing so in a way that would not negatively impact projects that were currently under construction or in the process. And Mr. President, that challenge has continued. Earlier this week, I thought we were getting close to a deal. Unfortunately, we were not able to bridge the gap. When I went to share where we were with the senator from Buchanan and the senator from St. Francis, they tasked me with a new challenge, and that is put together what I believe to be a proposal that no one will like, that everyone could maybe live with. I think I definitely have a proposal that no one likes, and I'm only hopeful that the will of this body will at least be able to live with it. What I'm going to do for the members is if everyone should have on their desk not only the substitute, not only the summary, but a small three-page, I guess for lack of better terms, let's call it bullet points for what's in this substitute. I'm going to walk through this so that everyone knows what's in here and why it's in there. And then from there, Mr. President, I will be happy to answer any questions and let the legislative process begin. So on this sheet, the first item is quality jobs. Under this substitute before us right now, we increased the cap on quality jobs to $80 million. Why $80 million? That is the number that DED has told us they need to deal with what they believe to be are the projects in the pipe. They believe at $80 million they can deal with the opportunities that are before us and hopefully be able to land some of the larger projects that are currently being negotiated. This also removes the per company cap under quality jobs, which is an issue that the senator from the 26th has been working on. And this also allows a company that has declared bankruptcy into reorganization of bankruptcy to actually continue receiving the quality jobs benefit. This is not a proposal that I personally like. It is one that many members in here have pushed me to put in as they believe it is necessary for us to maybe be able to survive today's debate. The second one is the build program. And the build program, we increased the cap from $15 million to $25 million. And we also removed the provision that requires companies to seek competitive bids from other states. And as many of you may remember, the senator from the 26th, I believe, talked about this early on, where Monsanto was forced to go to other states and get proposals and then had to come back to us and say, here's what they'll do, now will you match it? We get rid of that provision. This increased the new markets provision from $15 million a year to $25 million a year. I know that the senator from Monroe, who has talked to me about this in great detail, has a couple projects that he believes, if this does not happen, unfortunately will not make it across the finish line. The number four is the distressed area land assemblage tax credit. And as everyone knows in here, I fought adamantly against this tax credit. It's $95 million. In the original proposal, it would have allowed $10 million per year to be taken towards this credit. The senator from the 26th has fought and argued and actually convinced me that by moving it from $10 million to $20 million does not change the overall cost to the state. But I believe from his discussion with some of the financial bankers, those associated trying to help advise on this particular project in the St. Louis area, that increase from 10 to 20 million is necessary in order to allow that project to keep moving forward. Number five is the business facility tax credit. This is one that representative in the House over there really pushed hard for. I believe this is for a company in Kansas City who has their headquarters here. I had actually spent a fair amount of time on the phone with this company trying to understand why they want to use this program versus the Quality Jobs program. I will tell you they actually would receive more state benefit by using Quality Jobs than this. Thus the reason we left it in. The number six is the Build America Bond program. This was a request by the second floor. They've asked us to put this in. This, and what they are telling us is this will allow them to use more efficiently use the bond provisions under the Federal Stimulus Act. Number seven, the job training. This was one of the governor's underlying requests, if I remember correctly, when he first began this session. I think there were three issues he asked for in his State of the State address, this being one of them. Thus the reason it's in. The Neighborhood Assistance Program. This makes some changes to the eligibility of the program for owner-occupied housing units. I know there's been some challenges around that, and I think this is a very reasonable approach to beginning to address those challenges. Number nine is the reportability of transportation development districts. I believe the senator from the second, if I remember correctly, has filed this legislation and has pushed hard for this. Thus, the reason it's in. Number 10 will be one of the more interesting debates we have today, although I'm sure it will not be the only one, and it is around tax increment financing. And as we all know, the senator from the 13th has fought long, he has fought hard, he has some very strong philosophical fundamental beliefs around tax increment financing and what should be done in terms of reporting, in terms of a different structure. That is why it's in here. I believe we will see an amendment fairly early on from the senator from the 26th to make some changes to that. Number 11, I imagine we will spend a fair amount of time discussing today, and that is the Historic Preservation Tax Credit Program. As we all know, this program is one of the more beloved, protected programs that we have in the state. It is one that many of us believe have met a tremendous need. It is a very good program that many of us support. And unfortunately, today, it is an unlimited program. It is structured as an entitlement, and unfortunately, we can no longer continue to afford it at the past level. What this does, this simply puts a cap on it of $150 million. Again, this puts a cap of $150 million. That is more money than we spend in funding all community colleges in this state.
That is more money than we spend in funding all higher education scholarships in this state. If this was a line item in our state budget, it would be somewhere in the top 10, probably around the top 8, actually. So this is clearly, even at the $150 million cap, an incredibly high priority for this body. Number 12, the Brownfield Redevelopment Tax Credit. What this allows, as I, the way I understand it right now, is anytime a Brownfield project is underway, DNR has the ability to withhold 25% of the final payment, the final part of the tax credit. They are doing that in some situations in the belief of the senator from the 26th, and many who have been working through this, is that they're able to hold that for multiple years, which creates challenges for the developers. I believe the senator from the 26th has found a reasonable proposal on how to address it, and he has asked that it be part of this package, and thus it was. Number 13 is an issue raised by the senator from Cape. I think he has opened our eyes to some of the larger challenges that we have had in our tax credit program, specifically around the Missouri Development Finance Board. And what this proposal simply does is it keeps the $10 million soft cap in place, but under the rules today, you have the $10 million soft cap with the signature of three people, none of who are accountable to the people of this state. They are actually able to waive that to an unlimited number. Right now, under this proposal, we still have the $10 million soft with the signature of those three people. They can then go to a maximum of $25 million. So essentially, you put a $25 million hard cap on the Missouri Development Finance Board. The low-income housing tax credit program, we have the 9% credits, we have the 4% credits. Primarily, the 9% credits are the ones we hear the most about. What this does is the 4% credits right now have no cap. This proposal would put a $6 million cap on the 4% credits. Everyone has been okay with that. It has not been a controversial item at all, and in fact, no one has even been to talk to me about it. Number 15 decreases the cap on the Family Development Access Account. Again, came from the House. Right now, the cap's $4 million. They've never used more than a couple hundred thousand dollars in any given year, so this takes the cap from $4 million down to $300,000. Number 16, the low guarantee fee tax credit. This is essentially into the project. This is the program that the Senate Appropriations Committee voted not to authorize in 2008. And so I believe the Joint Committee also reviewed it and decided that ultimately we probably don't need it. Number 17 is the Rebuilding Communities Tax Credit Program. This would end the program. In 2005, the Department of Economic Development Incentive Review Committee recommended eliminating it. If I remember correctly, the dollars that typically have gone through here in the past can now be received through the Enhanced Enterprise Zones and the Quality Jobs Program. Number 18 and number 19 essentially deal with the Missouri Accountability Portal. What this does is it just puts into state statute that we will have the Missouri Accountability Portal and then the tax credits and who receives the tax credits and the amount to which they receive will be part of it. On number 20, this is the Tax Credit Accountability Act. Essentially what it does is it ensures that all of our tax credit programs have the same reporting requirements as that act that we as a body laid out in 2004. Number 21, the corporate franchise tax. This is one the House sent over. It's one they have been adamant about in all of our discussions. There are currently approximately 15,000 companies in this state that pay the corporate franchise tax. This would eliminate 12,000 of the 15,000 from paying that tax. And it would do that by increasing the asset threshold from $1 million to $10 million. That the approximate cost per year will be somewhere around $12 million annually. Number 22, the senator from Howe has stood on this floor and talked about the Big Government Get Off My Back Act. This is the same language that he has been promoting, and thus the reason it's in the bill. Number 23 is the closed records. This allows DED or a public institution of higher education to deem certain records closed. And this is essentially what is happening, is when we have in an incubator state a company that is beginning to evolve, and under our sunshine laws, competing states or competitors can actually use the sunshine law to request proprietary information, and that's the challenge they've been working through, thus the clarification of this language. And finally, number 24, this again came from the House. This changes the licensing requirements for pharmaceutical companies doing business in the state of Missouri. Right now, the way that it was explained to me by Representative Fluke is that if a company wants to have a distribution center in our state, they've got to route their drugs through another state and clear it through there and then bring it to us. And that is nothing more than a burdensome, cumbersome process, and this aims at cleaning that up. With that, Mr. President, I would move for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
The senator from Andrew has moved for the adoption of Senate substitute number 2 to Senate committee substitute, House committee substitute for House bill number 191. Does any senator desire to be heard upon that motion? The senator from Franklin, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an amendment. It has been distributed. I ask for a waiver of reading.
Please send your amendment forward.
And I would like to move the adoption of the amendment.
The reading shall be waived. Senators, move for the adoption. You may proceed.
It's time for the senator from the 13th and I to go to battle. There's a provision in here about the countywide TIF commissions across the state. In 2005, I chaired an interim committee that studied TIFs. We toured different places across the state. And I filed a bill in 2006 to rein in TIFs. This body chose not to go and do provisions that affected the rest of the state. In the St. Louis area, in fact, in 2007, with the Economic Development Bill that was passed, there were provisions that were passed for the establishment of countywide TIF commissions in St. Louis City, St. Louis County, St. Charles County, and Jefferson County. It seemed like during the discussion, during the interim committee discussion in 2005, the problem areas, the most problems in the state regarding TIFs were in the St. Louis metropolitan area, and we've dealt with those. The rest of the state, there really isn't a problem. There really isn't. There might be an isolated case here or there. But this body voted, and this body told me back in 2006 that they didn't want to go with statewide regulations. I understand where the senator from the 13th is coming from, but it isn't right. It isn't right to inflict a problem on everybody else where there is none existing. Therefore, I absolutely believe that the current law is sufficient and the current law should not be changed. I'll be glad to entertain any questions. I know there's going to be a lot of discussion on this, and I renew my motion.
The senator from Franklin has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Substitute Number 2 to Senate Committee Substitute to House Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 191. Does any senator desire to be heard upon that motion? The senator from the 14th, what purpose are you seeking recognition?
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Inquiry of the chair.
Please state your inquiry.
Mr. President, I'm not sure if you are aware that there's a group of students here that are from my district. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that you have a relative in that school. It's St. Anne's School in Normandy. They've come here to see the last 2 days of session, and so I just wanted to know if you were made aware of that.
Well, Senator, I realize that we are past the point in session where we cannot introduce special guests, but I do appreciate your inquiry of informing me that there were students in the upper gallery. And for your knowledge, yes, my nephew is sitting up here with me, and he is from there. So if we were able to introduce guests, I would gladly have introduced them, and I'm sure you would have.
Join you in that, Senator, and let your nephew know that he has the best senator in the state. Thank you.
Well, he does know that.
He does know that. And I would probably make him paid for the day to serve without compensation.
I think that would be appropriate as well, Senator.
I think so.
So, well, thank you so very much. I appreciate the inquiry.
Does any other senator desire to be heard upon the motion put forth by the senator from Franklin, the senator from the 8th? What purpose are you seeking recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President, to speak on the amendment offered by the senator from Franklin.
Please proceed.
I invite my colleagues to take a look around them when they go back home. Come to my district, the senator from Franklin's district, virtually any district in this state. Even now, rural districts, where local governments have chosen to use tax increment financing. This is one of the most egregious examples of government interference in the private marketplace. We have incented the private marketplace to develop retail commercial space by taking that space off of the property tax rolls so that the developers and those that rent that space do not have to participate in the property tax system that everybody else has to participate in that funds our schools and a lot of other things. And we tend to get more of what we incent. And because over the last 10 years we have incented the marketplace to give us something that it would otherwise not give us unless the government intervened and gave an incentive, guess what? We've got more of that thing that we have incented than we can now consume. Just like we incented homeowners to buy houses that they could not afford, we got more houses than we could afford, and now we have a collapse, a complete collapse in the housing in this country. All through these hallways, people are fighting to preserve the ability to get government assistance with building retail commercial space. And let me say to everybody that's in the hallway trying to fight what the senator from the 13th is doing, you are hurting our economy. Because you are trying to preserve a system that has incensed the building of a certain type of real estate, and now we have way too much of it, and we have empty storefronts because we have told the marketplace to give us more than the consumer and the marketplace can handle. We can only handle so much retail space in this country because we only have so much wherewithal to buy the things that are offered for sale at retail in retail commercial shopping centers. So what the senator from the 13th is doing is about five clicks short of what I think needs to be done, which is an outright ban on the use of tax increment financing. What he is doing is simply saying we are going to set up a governing mechanism so that municipalities that are and local governments that are closely that are next to each other have to work together and they can't steal from each other. That means that the Lee Summit can't steal the Best Buy from Independence and Blue Springs can't steal the Lowe's from Independence. And we can't further incent businesses to move out of urban areas to suburban areas, then we're going to need to incent them to move back to the urban areas. And that's the silly, goofy thing that we have going on. We're incenting businesses to move by interfering in the private marketplace, and then we have to re-incentivize or add more incentives to get them to go back to other areas, the areas that we incented them to move from. It is the height of goofiness. No, to make an incentive, we can incentive. We need a new verb because we need the word incentive. Incent. Okay, incent. Thank you for correcting my diction. What the senator from the 13th is simply saying is that where you have counties that have multiple local government jurisdictions, they have to work. They have to come together. The board is going to be a countywide board. Now, I've heard the senator from St. Francis gave me an example and I'm sure the senator from Franklin would have an example like this, where you have municipalities in the same county and they don't like each other. Well, guess what? That's the problem. You have a little city here that, and this is another interesting thing, they're not even spending their own money. They're spending the school district's money. Because that's the problem with TIF. You get the city council that's not even spending really its own tax money. It's spending the school's money. So that makes the use of TIF even more rampant than it would otherwise be. So the city council in City A uses the school's money and agrees to forego the property taxes from whatever new development to steal the Walmart from the city that's 5 miles down the road. That's insanity. And all the senator from the 13th is proposing to do is say, you all have to sit on the same board together. And what? Let me predict what's going to happen. All of a sudden, they're going to learn that they the only projects that they're going to approve are truly projects that bring new stuff in and don't steal it from the other little cities or municipalities that are in close proximity. They're going to have to work together rather than working in these silos of the cities that are all in close proximity. It's a very reasonable step. He did it for St. Louis County. It's working in St. Louis County. And the senator from Howell will report that he's got the same doggone problem down in Howell County. This problem is moving out because here's the deal. The retailers and the developers of these shopping centers have figured it out. They do the stick-up job. Give us a tip or else. And so all over the state, the stick-up job's happening, just like it does here in the legislature. We had the stick-up again this year. We have several major companies that are going to march off to some other state if we don't cough up the incentives. It's the every year now. Last year it was Bombardier. It's the stick-up job. Well, TIF, those that request TIFs have been doing the stick-up job at our local city governments over and over and over again. And now, folks, we don't have money to fund public education. We are slowly and slowly taking more and more government revenue. Now, as a conservative, I have real concern about that. Because I just think what that's going to do is ever more increasingly shift the tax burden to the middle class taxpayer. Because the poor people don't pay the taxes, and the rich people only expose a fraction of their overall wealth to the taxation system, so the person that gets whopped in our tax system is a W-2 taxpayer. Because they realize a massive portion of their net worth in taxation. So the more that we shift off the tax books in special incentives and tax credits, and today we're going to debate historic preservation because we're downloading a bucket of tax incentives to those folks, more and more is going to get of that burden gets shifted to the middle class taxpayer. If you're not getting a tax incentive, you are paying for somebody else's tax incentive. So the senator from the 13th has a very reasonable proposal. Now, do the lobbyists like it? Heavens, no! Because the recipients of government largesse do not like being knocked off the tit. And I'll say it in brisk terms. The government tit. Because that's exactly what's happening. They suckle at the government tit. And they will not be knocked off easily. And so that's why you see no small amount of angst about the senator from the 13th proposal. Because the practical result means there will be less TIF projects going on. That's exactly what needs to happen for the taxpayer in this state. So let me urge you, this is an opportunity to vote for your taxpayer and to vote against those that receive the special anointing from government and get the special tax break from government. And I would urge you to vote against the amendment offered to us by the senator from Franklin. Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The next person seeking recognition was the senator from Clay. For what purpose are you seeking recognition?
I would like to inquire the senator from the 11th.
Senator from the
11th. I'm sorry, not the 11th, the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I agree with many of the things that you said, but I also wanted to talk to you about something because you said that with regard to the taxes, that basically we're taking school money and we're shifting it over to developers. I would assume, isn't that, am I saying that right?
Accurate.
Well, there's another concern that I think you and I share, is that people in our area have been drowning under the additional weight, the financial weight, of real property taxes. And is it your opinion that every time that we give one of these TIF breaks, that we are, in effect, putting more pressure to raise the assessed valuations, to raise the school taxes, so that individuals in their homes have to pay more money?
You know, that is extremely well described. Because here's, you put your finger on the reason why we don't get political force. I predict that, my sense is that there is more than a majority of us in the Senate that would support what the Senator from Franklin is doing. Because, and here's why, because what you just described, we have not done a very good job of telling the people that story. The reason why property taxes are going, there's ever increasing pressure to raise property taxes, to raise bonding,
right,
and to keep assessed valuations ever increasing, is because the revenue flow on the front end has been taken off the books. Now, people will say, well, these projects wouldn't have been done without TIF. No, I got news for you. I grew up in the 1980s, and guess what? They built shopping centers in the 1980s before somebody paid, before government became a partner in it. And in the early 1990s, they actually built some shopping centers. Now, guess what? They wouldn't build it if they didn't think that there were going to be enough customers come. Now they can build shopping centers that they know would fail without the government assistance.
Right.
Because the government becomes a partner, in a sense, we are giving a leg up in the marketplace to these players in the marketplace and allowing them to pursue an unsustainable business model by giving them money that would otherwise have gone to school kids.
And the schools are the number one recipients on. When people look at their tax bills, by far and away, schools would be the number one recipient of real property taxes.
I'll bet it's 85%. In our county, I'll bet it's 85%.
And personal property as well.
Right.
And so when we had the hearings across the state of Missouri about real property assessments and real property taxes, I saw people at those meetings that, well, frankly, they just were too shy or too scared to go forward and even testify. But they were showing me their real property assessments, and they were showing me their real property taxes. Most of them were elderly people. Not all. But I saw their taxes and their assessments because of this pressure. Taxes on a home that had not had any significant improvements to it go from around $2,000 a year to nearly $4,000 a year. That particular instance was an 85-year-old lady who was a widow who was living on a fixed income. And so my great concern is that so many of these folks that are out there, that they can't afford a lobbyist. We are their lobbyists. That they're being pushed virtually out of their home because they can't afford the lease payments or the rent payments to the government anymore for their house that may already well be paid for, but they can't afford it. And we're shifting around that tax burden by these different specialty and designer tax cuts.
Senator, this is interesting because Very, very interesting what you're pointing out here. And, I hadn't kind of gotten downstream on this. But think about this. And I wonder if the senator from the 13th ever looked at the numbers. I'll bet that if you could magically take every TIF project that's currently in the state off the books, you could probably take every senior citizen that's under the age of 60 and give them a huge break on their property taxes. If we did that. Now, here's the deal. We'll come in here and say, oh, yeah, we really believe that senior citizens pay too much in property taxes. But then we're going to turn around and we are going to forbid any kind of restrictions on the thing that would allow us to ease property taxes for seniors. So your point is extremely well taken. The seniors across the state who are being forced out of their homes need to understand that the reason why we can't give you a break on your property taxes is because there is a developer who's building a shopping center that we need to give your property tax break to instead.
Well, and there's also another group impacted by this. You said you were raised in the 80s. Well, I was going through high school in the
70s. Actually, I was raised in the 70s. I graduated high school in the early 80s.
Okay. Well, I got your beat on that. I graduated in the mid-70s. But the thing that concerns me is we have people who have consistently invested in our neighborhoods, in our communities. They developed before all those incentives were available. And we do precious little for them. But we do give lots of breaks to the new guy on the block. And that concerns me greatly because we have people who have consistently invested in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our communities. They've done everything from support the local softball team to providing jobs in the community, and they do it quietly. They don't really ask for much, but they're not at the table. Those people get bowled over by the ones who come in and get the specialty cuts. And I'm also concerned about them who have so consistently supported us in our communities. So I don't know if you've got a comment about that.
Well, I'm going to just say this one thing in general. The same people who take government subsidies on the tax side look down their nose at those that receive wealth transfer payments from the government that receive wealth redistribution. You get the businessman who takes the tax credit in the suburban area who looks at the farmer who receives a subsidy from the federal government and says, I'm paying for you and this isn't fair. Or says that to the single mother who receives a welfare payment that but here's the truth. If you receive a direct government transfer payment, you are a welfare recipient. Let's call it what it is. And we all have different feelings about whether that's a good thing. But so too, if government gives you the ability not to pay a tax that everybody else similarly situated has to pay, you are a welfare recipient too.
Bingo.
If you
absolutely
have,
right.
If government has given you a special free pass,
right,
not to pay a tax that everybody else has to pay, you too are a welfare recipient, and you just need to stand up under it and realize that.
Right.
I think the senator from Cape Girardeau had the perfect idea. You must come and stand in line with other welfare recipients to convince the legislature that
wonderful
your welfare
idea.
Payment should continue
right.
in the next budget year.
Wonderful idea, because I have been concerned about this for and I'll have to tell you before the thunder comes, because sooner or later you and I and some of the other folks who are supporting the senator from the 13th in his reform efforts the thunder's going to come down on our head that, well, now wait a minute, you supported this TIF or you supported that tax credit. Yes, that's true, but you know what? I've changed my mind on a lot of these things, and I'm realizing that what I have been engaging in is picking winners and losers in a capitalist society, which I should not be engaged in as a government official. Everybody ought to have an equal shot, and the problem that we have created, unintentionally so, but yet we have created, is we have created a false pressure for the schools to go out and ask for tax increases, ask for increase in their bonding capacity, ask, in effect, constantly for our taxes to have to go up on our homes, which is supposed to be the number one thing that we protect here in the United States, personal, private, residential homeownership.
You have spoken the truth. Now, Senator, here's what I hope procedurally happens. I hope we come to a vote on the senator from Franklin's amendment. I predict it will pass. I hope it comes to a vote. I predict it will pass. I'm voting against it. I hope my colleagues do, too. But I think the Historic Preservation Tax Credit boys are going to kill this bill because they absolutely will not accept any sort of cap on their program.
So let me get this straight. Missouri, who was Missouri one of the original 13 colonies?
No,
we weren't. Virginia was.
We were 1821.
Virginia was, right. Virginia was one of the original 13 colonies, I believe. Okay. Just for our little history lesson. We are way outspending Virginia with regard to historic preservation tax credits. Don't you think that any student of history would understand that Virginia would have more historic places that they would need to preserve than Missouri? I would think so.
I would too, Senator. I appreciate your inquiry because you've highlighted a number of really good things. And if the public starts understanding the truth that you've just shared, all of a sudden the tide's going to turn.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the inquiry.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from the 1st was next, seeking a recognition. For what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Could I inquire the senator from the 13th?
Senator from the 13th, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for yielding. The reforms that you are advocating in the area of TIFs, do they do away with the TIF program?
No, they do not do away with the TIF program.
I mean, it's something that you've already put into law that affects our area, right? Our region?
Yes, and thank you for inquiring. I can respond a little bit with your inquiry to some of the issues the Senator from Franklin had inquired about. He took up a committee of senators around the state, I believe, in the summer of 2005 because the TIF issue was just out of control. We continually would not pass any TIF reform. So we basically did this study, came back, and we tried to redefine blight. Wasn't going to happen. The special interest would not let that bill happen. So we tried to come up with TIF commissions. Was not going to happen. The bill doesn't go anywhere. I'm frustrated. Actually, so is the senator from Franklin. So lo and behold, we had a developer from St. Louis come up with this idea, which we are dealing with in this bill, dealing with, what's the word I'm looking for in North City?
Land assemblage?
Land assemblage. And it's a $95 million tax subsidy program that is being pushed by every lobbyist and special interest group. Everybody's been hired on the issue. We debate the issue for about 8 or 9 hours. I sit for those hours waiting to offer an amendment to create TIF commissions for just the St. Louis metropolitan area. Now, I want to let you know these developers that want this land assemblage are the ones that have been killing any type of reform on TIFs. So lo and behold, a lot of people are bored with the debate, and the amendment goes on. Now the amendment goes over to the House, and they say they're not going to take it because special interest figured we're just going to kill it. Well, one of the classiest things the senator from Franklin did was he said, no, you're going to take it, or I'm not taking the bill up. And he stood up because he knew the abuse TIF was taking. So we created this TIF commission in the metropolitan St. Louis area. And it's working. People are having to talk. When you get elected to office, everybody likes to talk. We need to work as a state. We need to work as a region. When we go to our RCGA meetings, we just need to work as a region. But when we get back home, we watch little empires. They call them cities. I call them little empires. Compete with each other and devastate each other's community over trying to incent people to come to their community and leave your neighbor's community.
And what your TIF commission does then is make these people sit around the table together and work as together
exactly.
as a region.
Every county has a TIF commission. If you look on the Senate substitute on page 16, I believe it is, and basically all the piece of legislation I'm dealing with takes out this solely deals with the St. Louis metropolitan area. Just takes that portion out so then it would revert to a statewide. But look on page 16, and it talks about approving a redevelopment plan, create a commission consisting of 12 persons to be appointed as follows. 6 members appointed by either the county executive or the presiding commissioner. So your county government officials will have input. 3 members appointed by the cities, towns, and villages in a county which have tax and financing districts in the manor. So all the municipalities would pick somebody to represent them. Then, as the senator from Clay was talking about, school boards. Now, the school board, especially the cooperating school district, but the school boards all around the state have always understood this issue and supported the issue because they have no voice when you're taking those tax dollars from them school
right.
districts. I have never, Senator, used the argument the senator from Clay brought up that when you continue to take money through TIFs to the schools, yes, the schools are going to come back and say we need more money and hit the property owners. So once again, the property owners pay for the development but also get increased taxes. And then one member to represent the other levying districts. Some of these counties have library taxing districts or fire protection districts. That would be that person. So they all have to sit around the table and say, is this good for the community?
It seems to me, Senator, what you're doing and what you've done in our region is you've almost called a truce, or the different entities have called a truce because of this to come together and work together as a region. Let me just, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, Senator, but many of our colleagues may not be. The article that was in the St. Louis Post Sunday, January 25th, that talks about this issue and how it affected our region. Since 1990, the St. Louis region's crazy quilt of taxing authorities has dedicated more than $2 billion in public money to subsidize private economic development projects. And there's almost nothing to show for it. Then it goes on. It says the primary beneficiaries of the public investment have been national retail chains, real estate developers, lobbyists, and public finance lawyers. It says that a very comprehensive study by the East-West Gateway Council of Governments has put this information together. And again, Senator, I applaud your efforts on this and how it's working in our region. I mean, I think about some of the meetings that we have down here with great corporate citizens like Deerbergs and Schnucks. And Shop and Save that, do a lot for our communities, yet in many cases they're put in on an unlevel playing field, against these super retailers that are coaxed to a community through these TIFs. I'm not saying that those that I just named didn't take advantage of TIFs in the past.
No, they'll be the first to tell you they have.
Yeah, they will tell you that.
But they don't agree with them, but you're going to reward the ones that aren't the good corporate citizens. Why should I sit back? I should take advantage as well.
But again, this is a prime example. We've said it on this floor over and over again this session of government picking winners and losers. And that's not the business we should be in. Senator, I'm not going to prolong this because I think that there's going to be a lot of talking. And
Senator, I want to thank you for standing up and being supportive. And you want to know one of the issues that how this kind of came to a peak is several years ago, the former senator from the 15th, who was the pro tem at the time, was supportive. And the reason he became supportive, even though all the developers and all the lobbyists were fighting against it, is there was a community in his district that I think butts up to your district. I can't think of the name.
Sunset Hills area?
Sunset Hills.
Yeah.
And how he explained it is, there was this nice middle-class, working-class community. And they came in to the municipality and says, we want to buy out all these homes and we want to build a shopping center. The people fought it for a while, but they were at a losing battle, so they gave up. So they started looking for homes because they were going to get bought out.
Right.
And some of them had packed up, and some of them did not maintain their homes for about 6 months. Maybe I need some new siding. Maybe I need a new roof. Stupid to do that. The house is going to be torn down in 6 months.
Right.
The Saturday they were all to close on those properties, the developer could not pay them.
Right.
So they were stuck. Some of his constituents, he told me, and probably some of your constituents, with two homes.
Right.
They had already gone out and purchased, but not had yet closed because they were closing on this other house. Their kids were already placed in different schools for the next year, and they were left high and dry. Now, if you would have came in as a regional TIF commission and said, we need the shopping center, that region would say, why do we need to build a new shopping center? We have one right here.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example in North St. Louis County. We have the Mills Mall, the city of Hazelwood, TIF big time. If we didn't have, if they didn't have a Cabela's, I think it would be closed by now. You go in the mall, there's vacancies in it. Well, basically, when they were doing the TIFs, you had other shopping centers saying, don't do this. Well, I have Jamestown Mall in North St. Louis County. It's pretty much closed up, a lot of vacancies. Northwest Plaza is now looking for a TIF. They're pretty much closed up, a lot of vacancies. So building that mall in Hazelwood may be good for Hazelwood, but you have devastated the retail at Jamestown Mall and Northwest Plaza. So now we have two vacant malls because we got one new mall. Nobody's working together.
Right, right.
Nobody cares to work together.
And Senator, that example that you gave of Sunset Hills, just a mile and a half down Watson Road, Crestwood Plaza, that was struggling, and you had major tenants there that were talking about moving a mile and a half down the road to Sunset Hills.
You know,
this is a perfect example.
You know the funny thing, when you run for office, people always ask the question, or when you go to meetings, why are we building this mall? Why can't we keep this mall? Why are we using taxpayer money for this? They're against it, but we come up here and we don't fight for them. We allow these people out here to dictate the public policy. I am hopeful we defeat the senator from Franklin's amendment and we push the issue. And I am so tired of the Chamber of Commerce and all these people getting the subsidies in this economic development bill coming to me and saying, if we don't take out the TIF, you're going to kill the bill. Why can't the taxpayer get some reforms when we're doling out money every year? Why can't they? What did they do? I always use the example in my district, and I'm going to inquire when you're done with me of the senator from Howe. But there's that Handyman Hardware, True Value Handyman Hardware in Florissant, Missouri. They employ a good number of people. They give them health benefits. They're not union. They give them a pension. And when you go in, they're friendly.
Yeah.
They are super friendly. Now, the city had TIFed a Lowe's and a Home Depot across Key Shopping Center, and it's a nice development. I'm not going to argue it. But they TIFed these national chains. And God rest the owner, Soul, who has since passed away, but his sons run it. He came to me one day. He says, what did I ever do wrong? I says, what do you mean? He says, I don't mind competition. I know my stores will succeed, and they do, with that Home Depot and Lowe's. But what did I do wrong? I employ people. I pay them good wages. I ask for no government subsidies. And they turn around and give subsidies to corporate chains.
Right.
What did I do wrong? Why can't I be treated like that? Why can't you give me some of those breaks? Not that I want them, but why can't you do that for me?
Right. Right. Not a level playing field.
Where
right.
is fairness for, as we always say, we have to take care of the small business person? Where is this fairness for the small business person?
I agree. Senator, thanks for the inquiry.
Thank you.
Mr. President?
Senator from the first.
Could I briefly inquire of the senator from Worth? Nottoway?
Andrew? Senator from Andrew, would
asking
you...
Asking the senator from Worth.
Senator, would you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the first? Proceed.
Senator, do you represent the county of Worth?
I do.
All right, okay.
One of my 16.
They're
great folks.
Nobody knew that.
I really like them.
All right. Senator, I'm going to make this brief because, again, I'm not filibustering this bill today. I've been part of the process, and it's been a real learning process for me, and I appreciate your leadership on this issue. Have I gotten everything that I wanted in this bill?
Man, you have not even come close.
Have you gotten everything you wanted, Senator, in this bill?
Not even close.
How about the other senators that have been involved in this process over the last, four and a half months?
4 months, yep. No, I mean, this is a bill, as I said when I opened, that nobody loves, but my belief is that everyone can live with. And there's a difference there. And unfortunately, in this body, specifically this chamber, when we are in these moments of gridlock, what we all have to understand is that no one gets everything they want, and we have to compromise our way through the process. I believe the compromise that we have put on the desk today is very fair. It is one that no one loves, but again, it is one that everyone can live with.
Well, if I've learned anything through the process, Senator, through these deliberations, is that no one gets the whole loaf of bread in this process. I think that what we've been able to do is put together a good compromise, that hopefully we can get to a vote. And I think it'll be good for the people of Missouri, and we're moving forward, at least in some of those reforms that you and I have fought for the last 4 months. I want to make one more point, and I'm going to sit down. And unless I get inquired, maybe not get up for the rest of this debate. I think that in the next coming hours, we're going to have an opportunity again, and if it's not in the next few days, we'll be having the debate next year again because of our budget constraints.
That's right.
But I'm going to be consistent, if nothing else, as I serve in this body. And if I'm going to stand up on this floor and I am going to say that we have to make tough decisions as far as welfare that goes to the poor people of this state that need our help, if I have to stand here and make difficult decisions there, then by the same token, when we talk about welfare that goes to the rich people of this state, I'm going to be consistent and make those tough decisions there also.
This is about priorities.
I'm sorry?
This is about priorities. It's about this process right here today is just like the budget process. There are a finite number of dollars. We can only spend so many. And you are right. There is a point where you have to say, one, we can no longer have entitlements, and two, what level of subsidy or incentive can we afford to continue providing? And my belief is if this bill is not successful, and I hope that it is, but if it is not, I believe next year the challenge that we are looking down will be much graver, and the year after that will be even worse. And I believe that every year that this goes by, those who are holding this up, I believe this process gets worse for them, because I believe that financially we will continue to have greater constraints at every year that comes.
And with a finite pie, Senator, I refuse to be pushed into a corner where we have to shift the burden, as the senator from the 8th said, to the middle class of our state.
Correct.
To where we're going to have to raise taxes to meet those priorities.
That's right.
And I'm not going to support that.
I agree completely, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from St. Clair, for what purpose do you rise?
Briefly on behalf of the amendment.
To speak briefly on the amendment?
Yes, on behalf of the amendment. Mr. President, we've heard a lot of political flailing of the ear here this morning. To say that every TIF project in the last 20 years has been a detriment to schools, to the economy, is just absolutely ridiculous. Mr. President, this is an issue that has not had a bill, has not had a hearing. It's put on in the whatever the compromise issue is. It is a big issue. I agree with that. But to say every TIF project is bad, and I don't live in the suburbs, Mr. President. I live in the boonies. And sometimes the only way you get a project in the boonies is with a TIF. And schools can complain and growl all they want to, but you don't get any tax money off of a piece of pasture land. And this is a good idea to take this portion out of the bill for further discussion, and I will certainly support the senator from Franklin. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from Howell, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Yes, Mr. President, I would like to inquire the senator from the fighting 13th.
The senator from the 13th, do you yield?
It's the lucky 13th.
Oh, the lucky, I'm sorry.
It's the fighting
20th. Today it's the lucky 13th and the fighting 13th.
Can I make one thing clear so I don't have to inquire the senator from St. Clair, because I do not want to debate this all day? The issue that is in the bill does not deny TIFs. You can do TIFs. It doesn't stop them in one shape. What it does is it creates a TIF commission in the county of St. Clair. And if there is a municipality in the county of St. Clair, they're part of the TIF commission. And if there's another municipality in St. Clair, they're part of the TIF commission. So the entire region can say, this is good, and this is what's best for the community, instead of competing. Now, filing a bill issue that the senator from St. Clair mentioned, too. It's tough sometimes. He's right, I did file a bill. But neither did the Regional Commerce and Growth Association that received a $12 million subsidy that we all voted for the airport and the China transfer station. There wasn't a bill for the $50 million subsidy we're doing for the batteries either. So they make $72 million and don't file a bill, and I'm just trying to give the people a little voice. So if we're going to compare, let's file bills. Let's everybody file the bills then. I needed to clear the air on that.
Okay. I'll tell you a situation, it's an example of what I see happening in my district, and I'm sure it's happening all across the country, but a large box store makes a decision to locate into an area. And this box store, they have already announced that they're building, hundreds of new stores around the country. So what they do is they find a location that they want to go into, which is fine. We're glad to have them come in. But what happens is, let's say that this box store also sells lumber supplies. In one of my towns, I have three smaller family-owned lumber yards. So they're working. One of them has sponsored Little League teams ever since I can remember. I played on one of their Little League teams. And now we are, what's ironic about this is we encourage businesses to locate in certain areas out of downtown. And then we have to come up with a historic tax credit trying to get people back downtown again. Because what we've done is we've incentivized them to go outside of town. Now we have to come up with another incentive to bring them back into town. And it's a vicious cycle instead of just letting the free market system run its course. But this company comes in and gets special favors and TIFs. And at the expense of the local ones that have been there for 50 years that receive none of those benefits that have contributed to the economy. Now, I like competition, because the large box store is coming in. I as a consumer, anytime you have more competition, you're going to get a better product and a better price for the product because you're in competition. But to allow them to come in and get special favors at the expense of the people that have been there 50 years, I want them all to be on the same playing field, where they can compete without your own tax dollars, their own tax dollars, going in to help someone else that is coming in to compete with them as an unfair advantage. So this amendment that you're offering, will it help to alleviate
some
of that?
Well, actually, I have the issue we have talked about is in the bill. The amendment that is being offered takes the reforms that I would like to see statewide out of the bill. So go ahead.
Okay, but the amendment that you have, how will that help that situation that I have in one of the districts that I represent?
What county?
Howell.
Okay, Howell County will create a TIF commission, and your presiding commissioner will pick six people in Howe County to sit on that TIF commission.
Okay, so instead of, I have three large towns in Howe that go over 2,500, so those three cities are actively competing for...
Those cities would get together, and they would pick three people to serve on that commission.
So
now we're at nine. Now, the school district that the TIF affects would select two people to sit on that commission. And if you have a fire district in the county that it would affect, or a library district, they would get one person. That would make up your 12-member regional TIF commission. And then they would bring the proposal in, and then they would decide on it. Instead of your one town competing with your other town on who will get the most money, they'll all have to sit at the table on one commission.
Did we learn that in Sesame Street?
Oh, sitting down.
Cooperation.
Yeah, sitting down and talking to people. Well, we always, as I stated earlier, we always sit there and says, we got to work as a region, and then you come up here and you forget what you hear is working as a region. You mentioned one of your areas that you represent. There's another area that is right now, I believe, in federal court. You have a resort area in your district, Lake of the Ozarks, and there is a resort, Lodge of the Four Seasons, that did not get any TIFs or anything to build their resort.
You mean they actually run the profit analysis and figured out that they could build something and profit from it without government help?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think we did that anymore.
Well, it was built in the 1960s before TIF was legal.
Well, it actually was built before we had TIF. And yes. Actually built something. Okay.
So they're up there competing just like anyone else with the Tantara Resort, which didn't get any tax subsidies either to build. And a developer from Springfield wants to build another conference center right at the Grand Glaze Bridge and Highway 54 right there. And right now it is a boat dock dealership. Really big. And as you're coming... to Jefferson City, you cross the Grand Glaze Bridge, you'll see in a hillside this, I think it's Dave Munganess, I'm not sure, sails of boats, but also a bunch of dock slips for nice boats with the hookups of the water and everything. That is the area that recently was TIFed by the city of Osage Beach. They gave the developer a $3 million TIF. Now, to me, it's also the location where your new interchange, your bypass, comes around down at the lake, and it comes right back at Highway 54, right by this area. So saying this area is blighted is a little bit absurd, maybe, because there is a successful business there right now. The bypass is coming in right in front of the property. So the Lodge of the Four Seasons is upset that they're subsidizing. They're not trying to say don't put in competition, just don't subsidize it with taxpayer dollars. And that issue right now is pending in federal court.
You know, it's odd because maybe I'm just proud of my district, but I don't see anywhere that's blighted. We call it, there are areas more rustic, more scenic, more quiet, but I just don't see blighted as a... No, it was right. Growing up, I didn't know I was poor until the government told me I was. So I can't see the blight. And I thought that was blight was when your potatoes wouldn't grow. But
I want to thank you for sharing, because in the remarks from the senator from Franklin, he had mentioned that this was just a St. Louis problem. We have solved the problem with what we have done in St. Louis. It's not a state problem. You've had the senator from Clay and the senator from Western Jackson County speak that it's an issue in their areas, and I have an individual such as yourself standing up talking about rural communities, how it's coming into those areas as well. So with the arguments that several of the senators outside of the St. Louis region have made, it has made the argument that it is a statewide problem.
Well, I want to thank you for all your information you've been given out on this and your work on the subject. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The next seeking recognition was a senator from Cape. For what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire the senator from the 13th.
Senator from the 13th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. And if you could, where do we stand? The language that you wanted throughout this was included in the substitute. Is that correct?
Yes, and the senator from Franklin's amendment is to take it out.
In its entirety or just parts of it?
Just the bracketing out where it made the regional TIF commissions just for the metropolitan area to statewide, so it brackets out the definition of the east-west gateway area.
Okay, so nothing of what your original proposal would be left in the substitute if the senator from Franklin's amendment is successful.
That is accurate.
Except for what we passed 2 years, was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
It was when we did the land assemblage.
Okay, so that was in 327 in a special session, I think. So that was probably 2 years ago, I think.
Besides being sometimes free counsel, you can also be my free historian as well.
Yeah, right. Maybe I can get a tax credit for being the historian.
Well, hopefully you can't get a TIF.
I won't be able to TIF it. Now, because I think there is an evolution that's gone on. When you originally proposed this in 327, I opposed your measure.
Yes,
my analogy was, listen, it's a steak or it's a knife and a fork. In my mind, I can't help it that then in St. Louis, you take the fork and the knife and you use it for evil purposes. We in outstate Missouri have used the fork and knife to eat with, you know, basically. And but I think your reforms and where they were are, I have not heard, and of course I don't represent that area, but as I understood it, it was St. Louis County, Franklin County,
Jefferson
County,
St. Charles,
and
eventually it will be Warren with the population growth. They will merge
in Warren County, and then the city of St. Louis?
Yes.
I have not heard that the world has ended because they have to live within the reforms that you passed 2 years ago.
Yes.
I mean, no one has come up here and said, my golly, the senator from the 13th Amendment and reforms that he put in place in 327 have ended all, I don't know, whatever, rainbows and children and unicorns.
Except for the Gucci shoes. They have come up and told you.
No one's told me that.
They haven't even told
even
you.
Well, even the Gucci suits and alligator shoes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had
yeah.
it wrong.
Even the Gucci suits and alligator shoes.
We have several words this year. Incentivized. Alligator shoes and Gucci shoes.
Incentivized, back up was another one of my terms that I used in the House that they said is not true. And I think the senator from the 4th has corrected me on another term that I used to say. Gosh, it'll come to me, I'm sure, over the course of the debate on this bill. But there was irregardless. Irregardless is not a word either. So I'm doing my best to create words on the English language, but irregardless is not a word, incentivize is not a word, and back up is grammatically incorrect.
As a construction worker, I'm sure there are plenty of words I cannot use on this floor that are not actually words either.
And I hear you, and I appreciate it. So back to the point.
Yes,
I mean, are you aware, under your reforms, of anything in St. Charles, the city of St. Louis, Franklin County, Jefferson County, and St. Charles that hasn't been able to move forward because of, but for, causation of the reforms that you implemented in 327?
That's funny you use that but for, because that's the big debate about the TIF. It's developed.
Why?
It occur, it's, but far.
It was done specifically.
Okay, good. No, there have been no problems. And the one thing you have to realize is when I first brought the issue forward, we were dealing with income levels, unemployment levels, to try to create a definition of blight.
Right.
Knowing that would get nowhere, that's when we turned to, let's just create a commission that the region works together.
Right.
So I think the senator from the 8th said he doesn't think I went far enough. Personally, I do not either. But I think this is something people can live with, and they are now seeing it just forces people to work together.
And at the time, we heard projections from the Gucci suits and the alligator shoes that the whole world would end.
That is correct.
Is that not correct?
That is correct.
And that goes directly back to my question preceding that question was, has the world ended in your neck of the woods? I don't represent that area.
No, it has not.
And I don't think so. So now what are we hearing again with your legislation moving it from the St. Louis metro area to statewide? What are the Gucci suits?
It's going to have a devastating effect for any development in the state.
The same arguments that we heard were going to happen when we just limited it to the metro area.
Right, and I've had the senator from Clay, Western Jackson, Howe, and also St. Louis County, but from outstate areas say, we would like to have our region working together. You're just having people sit down and work together.
Right, and I will say that, to my knowledge, the only TIF projects, we do Series 100 bonds. I don't know why communities end up picking one way to go over another.
Well, the other kicker, too, is I've been working on TIF so long that since I've tried to get reform, we have created other tools as well. Community improvement districts,
right.
Transportation districts.
Right.
I'm not dealing with those issues, but
right.
They have kind of the same essence of
right.
TIF. So other tools have
it's
popped up.
It's a recapturing of the state sales tax, right?
Right.
It's a recapture. And then we call the super TIF a recapture of both payroll and sales tax.
That's on the state, which we've
yeah.
raised several times
yeah.
the maximum.
Right,
and
right.
It'll probably be raised again.
Sure. Okay. And I just, you know, I don't want to belabor it. I guess, I mean, do
no,
you have
I'm,
a roll
I'm,
call?
I am content to have another senator from, you know, the old saying, outstate. But if you go down to Cape Girardeau now,
right.
it's kind of pretty much a highly suburban community. It's not really outstate, so.
Yeah. I was just going to say, in Cape, the only TIF project I know they've ever even considered was some developer wanted to TIF rooftops on a gated golf course community. Wanted to TIF homes. It didn't go over very well.
There was a TIF project in a really plush suburb of Jackson County.
Right.
It was approved, and that's when I first was involved in the issue back in the early 90s. But
right.
they TIFed a very, I think the average home was $400,000.
Yeah, and it would be similar, but that hasn't occurred in Cape. And like I said, we really don't use TIFs that much. We use Series 100, Chapter 100 bonds whenever those developments are there. So is there a roll call?
I am going to ask for a quorum call before I close.
Okay, and it's your intent at that time to ask for a roll call.
And if I was to lose... after a voice vote, then yes, I would be doing a roll
okay.
call.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
And before, well, you're going to add, I mean, it's
I'm
not your amendment.
I'm going to make my stuff
yeah.
before.
Yeah, yes. It's not your amendment. So
yes.
at that point.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you,
Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard?
Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th for purposes
I notice the absence of a quorum.
One. 7.5. Okay. A quorum is not established. Mr. Sergeant of Arms, please send out the quorum call and summon the senators to the floor. A quorum has been established. Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 13th, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
I just briefly like to speak. It has been debated for plenty of time, and there's other issues to come forward. But we are dealing with the TIF reform issue that is in the substitute from the senator from Andrew, the senator from Franklin. has an amendment to take that reform out, and that reform is not to eliminate TIFs. It's just to create county TIF commissions so that the regions work together on what is best, and we quit having communities within a county fight against other communities. So with that, I urge my colleagues to defeat the senator from Franklin's amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard upon the amendment offered by the senator from Franklin? Seeing none, the senator from Franklin, you are recognized. Close.
Mr. President, in closing, I will say this. We've established the countywide TIF commissions in the St. Louis area. To my knowledge, there has not been one TIF application that has come forward, so we really don't know. I think St. Louis County, there's one brewing, maybe. But as far as I know, this procedure is untested. I can remember when the senator from Cape and others kicked my tail end in 2006 on the TIF bill. I remember it very well. And not to inflict damage on everybody else. If the problem's in St. Louis County or wherever, then deal with it over there. And that's what we did eventually in 2007 with the Economic Development Bill. I absolutely believe this is not the right thing to do, and I ask for everybody's support. So I close.
The senator from Franklin has closed on his motion to adopt Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Substitute Number 2 to Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 191. All those in favor of that motion say aye. All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The senator from the 13th, what purpose are you seeking recognition?
I'd like to get several of my colleagues to stand. I'd like a standing division.
You need one senator standing. You shall have a standing division. All senators, please take your seats for a standing division. A standing division has been requested and granted on Senate Amendment Number 1 offered by the senator from Franklin. All senators, please take your seats for the standing division on Senate Amendment Number 1. All those senators wishing to approve Senate Amendment Number 1, please stand. Please take your seats. All senators wishing to vote against Senate Amendment Number 1, please rise. Senator from the 24th, we do not have you indicated either way. Can you please? Thank you. By your vote of 19 aye and 12 no, you have approved Senate Amendment Number 1. Senator from Cape Girardeau, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
To speak on a point of personal privilege.
Senator, you may speak on a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was informed recently by our able staff that wear the blue jackets. They actually copied from the American Dictionary, page 755. Towards the bottom, the word second to the last on that dictionary is irregardless. I-R-R-E-G-A-R-D-L-E-S-S. Now, Mr. President, by Scrabble rules, if it exists in a dictionary, it is a valid word. Therefore, I rise to say I was wrong, but I was really right. So I was right before I was wrong, and now I want to be right again, Mr. President, and I will start using the word irregardless from this point forward. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from the 4th, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
Inquire of the senator from 24.
Please have order in the chamber. The senator from the 24th, would you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 4th? The senator from the 24th, irregardless of your desire to speak, the senator from the 24th, would you yield to an inquiry?
I yield.
Let us proceed.
Senator?
Yes.
Did you know that the students from Glen Ridge Elementary School in your district were here today?
No, I did not know that.
They are here.
If I'd gotten a note from my staff or something, I would,
yeah,
I would,
you know,
have been...
I have a... I didn't want to throw your staff out of the bus or anything here, but Deb Dubin, a friend of mine, I'm not sure if you know Deb. She lives.
Of course I know Deb.
Okay. She lives just a block away from Glen Ridge School and is here with her son, Max. I don't think her son, Charlie, is here today, but did you know Max knows the name of every capital, not just in the country, but in the world?
That is very impressive.
Yeah.
That is very impressive.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted
to... Yeah, well, thank you for letting me know that. I'm delighted that the students from Glen Ridge School are here and visiting the Capitol and have great parents accompanying them, and their teachers, I'm sure, are as dedicated and making this a very fulfilling educational experience for them. That's terrific to know.
Super.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from the 8th, what purpose are you seeking recognition?
Thank you. I'd like to speak on the bill briefly.
Please proceed.
I would also like to let everybody know, since it's a word that we need to be able to use today, incentivize is also a word in the dictionary. So we've got two corrections, and now we can have full and free debate, unencumbered by arbitrary and false rules imposed upon us by the senator from Jasper or the senator from Buchanan County. Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard upon the Senate substitute number 2? Senator from Cape, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
To inquire the senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield?
I yield.
He does proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I just wanted to make sure incentivize is a word as well. Is that you found that on dictionary.com?
Well, there's a really cool application you can buy on for an iPhone. It's free, and you download a dictionary.
You can buy for free?
You can, yeah, that's there. You, now, that would be inaccurate. But, you know, they
that
say, no,
like
they say, Senator,
iPhone, I heard
they, Senator,
things are
they say that there is nothing free in life. So, really, if you have downloaded a free application onto your iPhone, you have paid for it. For that free, supposedly free application
until
through other means.
Until we pass a fair tax.
I-N-C-E-N-T-I-V-I-Z-E, incentivize, is a word.
And I think under the unabridged official just-in-time-for-high-speed internet access Scrabble rules, if you can find it on dictionary.com, that is a word that is usable and presentable on the Scrabble board. So that means it's a real word. If you can use it in Scrabble.
Senator, there is one little caveat here. There are some that would not approve of the use of any word that was developed in this century or the last century. This word, its origin is
right here on the Senate floor?
Its origin is American, and it's from 1965 to 1970. And I was born in 1965, so this word has been developed in my lifetime. Hey, Senator, can you and I talk about the underlying bill at all?
I'm sure. I'm fine with that.
Because I'm interested in your thoughts on, You know, you spoke about the budget hawks, and I've sensed just a little bit of sarcasm in your voice, and yet I rate you as a budget hawk. I would have myself, I guess I would be in that category, but we probably all have different definitions of budget hawk. But I've always thought of you as being somebody that was somewhat of a budget hawk that was focused on burden on the taxpayer and also how much we're spending. I'm interested in your thoughts today as here we stand with a few hours left in session and your thoughts on this whole appropriations process. You birthed what I thought was the penultimate reform on tax credits, and one that would, I think, rather than coming in and either capping or placing limits here or there on tax credits, your thought was, let's move this entire process into the budget process, and if we do that, we have a natural braking mechanism, like anything else. And I just would like to have your thoughts about where we are right now and whether you think that's ever achievable going forward.
Well, let me tell you where I am right now. I am contemplating sitting down and letting this go to the House as is, because the House isn't going to take it up. And I'm trying to get confirmation of that. And if that is the case, because of the provision that, for the first time to my knowledge, that the senator from Andrew put in it, relating with a specific provision in the tax credit.
Which one? What are you talking about now?
Which
provision?
I'll let you figure it out.
No, I want to know. Because,
I'll let you figure it out.
Okay, is it historic preservation, the cap?
I'll let you figure it out.
No, I want to, I mean, we got to know what it is you're talking about.
I mean, if anyone was really interested in working on this, we would have continued the discussions that started in my office. And we didn't. Those were broke off because Senate leadership chose to go a different avenue.
But, Senator, my confusion on this issue stems from the fact that, and you correct me if I heard incorrectly, but you were fairly passionate early in the session about the need to place some sort of restraint on historic preservation tax credit. I hear that? No. I just want to know, because if that's not true, then I want to stand corrected.
I need you to put it in full context so that you understand where my position was, is, and remains throughout this entire process as it relates to the overall budget, as it relates to this overall bill, and as it relates to the issue that we have before us. So let's roll back to exactly how this all started. This all started with the governor in his state of the state laying out a request for quality jobs in the build program and job training. Those were the three things that the governor requested in his state of the state address as a jobs bill. In early February, the House started debating and sent over mid-February to the end of February a what they called jobs bill. Now, within that, there were components that, and I do not want to speak for you, Senator, that I think you and I both would agree were a little over the top as it related to incentives, whether making CADES, you know, tax exempt. There was a provision in Blue Springs that had a state recapture that was like a super TIF but didn't go through the super TIF parameters and created a new super TIF category. There were a whole plethora of things that came over. That was what was on the underlying part of House Bill 191.
And what do you recall what the total new additional tax credits in that bill?
I do not. I mean, at one time I had that information, but, you know, I didn't know we were going to 191 this morning.
Go ahead with your recitation.
The House sent that over, and then at that point, the President Pro Tem and the Senator from Andrew made it an announcement that we were going to couple tax credit reform with authorization of new tax credits. It was a decision that was made by Senate leadership.
No, because here's a place where your recollection of and mine diverged dramatically.
Okay.
I specifically remember you urging that there be enough, and I think the word you used was candy, in the bill to that we needed not to lose sight of the fact that the only way we were going to get something through is to have some tax credits mixed in with the tax credit reform.
Okay.
That made sense to me. In fact, you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, because this is I'm trying to understand your position from months ago.
I'm getting
but
it.
That you thought that there ought to be a combination of giving those that want more tax credits some of what they want and reforms together, and that the only way you were going to get the reforms is by combining those two.
Okay. And I appreciate that, and by all means, I do not have a recorded dialogue of every conversation that we've had.
Well, and also, Senator, you understand it is fair to change your mind, which, as you've pointed out on countless occasions when you sat where the senator from Andrews sits, I have been remarkably inconsistent in my career when it comes to the subject of tax credits. And I'm not suggesting you have been in this no, that's not fair. It would appear to me that maybe you've had a change of attitude on the subject, but I want you to know
right.
that I know that over the years, I've at one time voted for tax credits rampantly, and I've become of late less hospitable to them.
And I appreciate that, and I'm going to try to say why I believe I've been consistent, but, you know, what I believe is not what's important. You will form your own opinions. And,
but what
and
you believe is
but,
very important,
well, but
because you're not you're just run, you're just not. Now this is a compliment to you. You are not just an ordinary member of the Missouri Legislative, the General Assembly. You are extremely well informed. You are clearly one of the brightest of the 200, and you are plugged in quite well with the decision makers. And you also have the guts to do things that make other people angry, to force, to push where your position is. I admire these things in you. Sometimes I find them maddening. I'm going to have to give you that. But you're not, I mean, so for I don't know that for you to say, well, I'm just another member and what I think is irrelevant. Because I think what you think on this bill is having a big impact on what finally and ultimately happens with it, because you are not just a regular member of the General Assembly.
And I appreciate that, and I feel the same way about you, Senator. But why I want to say I believe I have been consistent in all of this, and to pick up where we left off when I was describing the process, at that point, discussions were had with the senator from Andrew and other senators on this tax credit reform group. I don't know what the senator from Franklin called them, the Magnificent Seven or whatever, you know, was going on. At that point, when the senator from Andrew and the senator from Buchanan said that these tax credits were going to be coupled together, then early on in March 30th, which was the first time this floor was ever presented any type of bill, that's when that pronouncement was made. Prior to that, I informed the senator from Andrew, I informed you that I do not support caps. I do not believe in the concepts of caps because as soon as you cap it, it becomes a commodity. And I've given example after example that I'd be happy to go over on the floor.
No, I really do then stand corrected because I always believed, I'll tell you, I started the beginning of this session, like, greatly encouraged. Because you came back in this session, and all of a sudden, you were like, you and I had fights about tax credits. You wanted to add some in, the film tax credit, which trying to be candid, I think is incredibly goofy. But we put it in, you and I had aggressive debate
right.
on it, and you came back this year and it was like, wow! The senator from Cape Girardeau
wants
to have tax credit reform.
I don't think that's fair, because last year I was the only senator standing up to the senator from Buchanan to get a better return on investment for the Bombardier
tax credits. I beg to differ just a tad bit, because I would invite my colleagues. In fact, there's a speech on the Internet where I laid out all of the reasons why what the senator from Buchanan was trying to do was really bad public policy.
And I agree that there were a lot
of people that were, but you came
but
back
I have
at
the
clock beginning
on who stood the longest trying to get those reforms.
That is true, but ultimately at the end you were in you let the doggone thing go. You were in. Did you even vote for it?
I did.
Because they got the better
return on investment.
But it still would have been $750 million, I think it was $750 million tax credit. But here's, let me finish this thought, and I'll be quick and let you get back to your recitation.
Well,
so you came back and gave impassioned speeches about how we need to rein in tax credits, and we need to put it in the appropriations process, we need reform. And in particular, I remember you talking about we need to rein in historic preservation tax credit, and now, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the sense that you are opposed to this bill because it seeks to cap the one tax credit where at the beginning of the year we have no clue how much it's going to cost us. So if we were going to pass this, we would have budgeting certainty on the top end of what historic preservation. Now, I agree with you that this is far less than the gold standard, which you developed. And every chance I got, I told people, I think I've heard the best idea in 10 years. I've had my frustrations with you, and you and I have had our fights, but I can recognize a good idea when I see one, and that's to bring all of this stuff into the appropriations process. And I'll grant you that this doesn't do that, and I wish it did, but I, for the life of me, can't understand where that tax credit reformer that was so full of passion in January and February. And maybe I've got it wrong that you're not opposing this because it has a cap on historic preservation.
Right.
But that's, and they say you should ask people face-to-face, that's what I'm hearing.
Right.
That you are opposed to the bill because it has the cap on historic preservation.
That is not accurate.
Okay. That's good. Thank you for clarifying
that. That is not accurate.
Then what in this bill?
A 1.3 million micro-exemption. If you want a bill right now, all you have to do is take the poison pill that the senator from Andrew.
Okay,
put in
let's take me there to it.
And then put a 1.3 micro exemption in historic preservation.
Oh, okay. So, but it is that,
and it's
you,
done.
Okay, but it is that you want there to be an exception to the historic preservation tax credit that would allow for more historic preservation.
Correct.
Okay.
And you still have a certainty. You still have the cap on an unencumbered entitlement program.
Okay, explain to me how the micro exception to the cap would work.
It would work for outstate Missouri. It would work for small projects.
Yeah, but tell me.
If a $1.3 million project, and I think this is very important, Senator, if you want to diverge from my progression of where we have been and recapture of where we have been to now come to here, I'm willing to do that. But we started this conversation you wanting to know my evolution, which I don't think is an evolution. I think it's been very consistent when I opposed the Bombardier tax credits to all other tax credits that we've dealt with, where I want to see a proven return on investment, and I want to know the net positive outweighs the net negative. And as it related to the senator from Andrew coming up with this coupling
and you know what? I know there is no small amount of tension between you and the senator from Andrew, and I've heard that you believe he totally made misrepresentation. Let me tell you what the senator from Andrew has had to deal with. There are six others of us that have really made this difficult for the senator from Andrew. It is not possible for seven people, all of us, to be engaged in every conversation because it's nearly impossible to get everybody to meet. And this has been maddening for the floor leader. And for, I'll tell you this, these guys over here have done everything they can to try to get a bill. The senator from Andrew has ferried between all of these different, and he's got to deal with people who have different opinions. And, you know, the senator from Hal and I probably are opinions line up the closest, but we're not even perfectly aligned. The senator from the first, he has a mind of his own, and he's got a different opinion. And then the senator from Clay has been involved, and not in every discussion. I've not been involved in every discussion, but it really gets really difficult because he's like trying to herd all of us.
I've never been critical of the senator from Andrew on this floor on anything. I understand where he's at. He understands where I'm at. What I'm telling you is how easily you could get a bill right now if you truly wanted a bill.
Well, here's the
and
problem.
That's to add the micro exemption to historic.
And now I lay all my cards on the table. Actually, I've already done this many times.
I would prefer
that we not add any tax credits whatsoever. That I think, and this is, you know, I think ultimately, and this is the senator from Howell agrees with me on this, and he can come rushing to the floor if he thinks I've misrepresented his position, that it is a mathematical certainty that we will have massive tax credit reform because the budget's going to make it inevitable. And it's the setting up that dynamic. But
only if you have a mechanism in place in which to do that reform.
Let me ask you this. On your micro, as you add, there's a $1.3 million. How many of those $1.3 million projects could be added by the micro exception?
My understanding is it's $8 to $10 million. And Senator, like I said before, if you want to go, we're in the middle of two discussions right now. You first asked me, where am I at? And I think trying to understand why you believe I haven't been consistent, and I'm trying to justify where I have been throughout all of this, that I have been consistent. If you want to abandon that conversation,
we've had, and now go into
the historic preservation.
We have creeped, but I also remember you saying, you correct me if I'm wrong about this, that you said early on that if we didn't put this in appropriations process, I thought you were gonna. You said that there weren't going to be any new tax credits at all. It was needed to be in the appropriations process, and I actually supported you in that. And actually, to this day, I would love it if we would put all of this in the appropriations process. Have you come to the conclusion that that is politically impossible?
We lost by one vote, and that's where I talked to the senator from the first, and I told him that in the appropriations process, where the senator from Jasper brought the bill forward, and when he brought it forward, I offered the amendment for the bill program and made the analogy of, boy, we don't give any oversight when we authorize tax credits on the Senate floor, but we won't do it within the appropriations process. I also highlighted the fact that with the rolling tax credit, which is subject to appropriation, the process worked perfectly. Everyone in this floor accused me of being corrupt, paid for by outside influences, and everything else, specifically, you know, the senator from the 26th gave his speeches, I said, we're going to do this in the appropriations process. Because I knew what was going to
Senator,
happen.
Senator, would you
and
be...
saw it. So
that was
so
lost
that
by
was,
one vote. It lost by one
it,
vote.
It lost by one vote here. If you let me finish, I mean, now we've got three open conversations that we haven't finished on any of them. But if you let me finish on that, in the House, it's a non-starter. And I am convinced it's a non-starter in the House. Today. But I am also convinced that may change when individuals no longer have the resources available to them to fully fund the foundation for them.
Right.
Now, the tipping point, I think, between myself and you, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth,
I would rather be subject to appropriations, which gives us the discretion as a General Assembly through the appropriations process to raise and lower caps based upon our financial outlook and needs and our analysis of each individual program available, as opposed to just arbitrarily putting in a cap.
I completely agree with you that the cap is like, capping is like a weak alternative to what you proposed. But you said that...
I think they're diametrically opposed.
But
I don't think it's an alternative.
But you said it's not politically possible to achieve...
Today. This second.
Right. So in the intro, if you and I agree that the public coffers are at risk...
Correct.
...because there are too many tax credits...
Correct.
...why wouldn't we take the step... less attractive, but of capping the number one tax credit in the state.
Number one, it is not the number one tax credit in the state. It is dramatically behind low-income housing tax credit.
Okay, fair enough.
And number two, it's not the second largest tax credit. It is dramatically behind the low-income housing tax credit we call circuit breaker.
Okay.
All right? So it's not the biggest. It just happens to be the target of ire.
Well, it's at... And correct me if I'm wrong about this, too. It's over $300 million for this year.
You're wrong.
What's it at?
I mean, we can get into that debate, but...
No, we need to know the numbers. At some point, because...
Right, sure.
I would invite
DED and Sally Hemingway. I mean, whether you're on one side of the camp or the other, I think everyone can agree, Sally Hemingway's...
Really,
does a great
really
job.
Rock solid.
Whether it was the conversations that I had when I was engaged on the senator from Buchanan's legislation from Bombardier, I mean, they didn't like me then, but they were still very, very forthright in their analysis and their thoughts. So I don't know if Linda Martinez and Sally are here, but I mean, I'm sure they could get here and we could get the answers to any of those questions that may pop up as this debate goes forward. Now, we have three active conversations.
I thought we closed one.
Okay. Well, we can close with, I think, one more category where we are in historics. Why wouldn't you take as the alternative a cap? And my response to that is, I am, as long as we have the 1.3 million micro exemption. And you take a uncapped entitlement tax credit, and you get a cap without devastating new projects and opportunities that are emerging in my community that I represent. And those are projects under $1.3 million will still go forward. And let me finish with this statement on how historic preservation works in my neck of the woods and why the $1.3 million exemption is so important. And I'm going to tell you, it's a chicken or the egg analogy. In my neck of the woods, we have several vacant buildings that qualify for historic preservation tax credits. Those buildings have owners that have basically abandoned them. What happens is an individual, a husband and a wife, a group of individuals that form an LLC, see this empty building, and the entrepreneurial spirit hits them. And as such, the entrepreneurial spirit allows them to come up with an idea that will redevelop this building. But there's two hurdles. Number one, in order to apply for the historic preservation tax credit, you must be the fee simple owner of the property. Okay? In order to get fee simple, most individuals or most businesses have to borrow money. I mean, can we agree on that? That most people can't go out and buy $1 million building by just peeling off 20s. They usually have to go get financing. What happens is, currently under the program, with the requirements of 80-20 for loan investment, historic preservation tax credits are viewed by banks that extend money to purchase these as meeting your 20% obligation.
So financing is able to occur for fee simple ownership. Once that occurs, then an application, and you own fee simple title to the property, is placed with the DED, and the tax credits are then authorized. The improvements are made, and a vacant building is all of a sudden improved. And in the interim, you have jobs that are associated with the improvements. So where the chicken and the egg argument comes, a bank is never going to provide financing for new owners of that building without the historic preservation tax credits because of the capital markets that are there. Now, I am willing to live with $150 million hard cap for large projects. Where the micro-exemption is so important is to not upset that balance that bankers have come to know that the historic preservation tax credit can be used as part of the match for the 80-20 financing structure simple title.
But it just gives, it basically keeps an entitlement in place so that if you're up against the cap, these people can get there. You know, why couldn't they do it under the cap?
Why couldn't they do it under the cap?
Under a 150 cap.
Well, without the entitlement standpoint, the risk of where you fall in a hold-your-place allocation or where you fall on the overall $150 million versus all of the big players. And, Senator, in my opinion, with a cap, particularly an area that's a 58% Republican voting district that's in outstate Missouri, we're exactly not going to be at the top of the list of projects find themselves approved.
But you know that there is an easy way to address this to require a first-in, first-out type of treatment. In fact, that's the way it is handled.
But with a first-in, first-out, you still never get fee simple ownership. You cannot apply.
There is a provision here. Senator from Andrew has placed in front of my on page 94. It says if an application is submitted by someone other than the current or pending fee simple owners, the application shall be accompanied by a written statement from the fee simple owner indicating that they are aware of the application and have no objection to the request for certification.
That doesn't help get financing. That does not help.
That will help get them their approval that they then take to their financing. Why in the world wouldn't that solve the problem?
It does not.
Explain to me why this clause does not solve the very reason you're saying we have to have this exception to the cap.
As I understand it, the creditors will not loan you the money to transfer fee simple title because you don't have the authorized tax credit.
But this is saying you're going to get the authorized tax credit. It says that if an application is submitted by someone other than the current or pending fee, the application shall be accompanied. So we're saying here that the fact that you're not a fee simple owner won't be an impediment to you getting the tax credit that you need to take to your banker.
Yes, it is. And its application on where that is, it does not allow the transfer of the title, the holding of your place, the time delay between $150 million cap or anything else for that actual transfer of fee simple title to the individual,
Senator,
that will be using the historic preservation tax credit.
You know what? I can tell
on where
already,
that 1.3
where this is one where I must not have a big enough brain to understand what you're telling me, which is quite possible, because it sure appears to me here that you can get your historic preservation tax credit even if you're not a fee simple owner under the language in the substitute, which would sure appear to me to solve the exact problem you're
telling
me.
So long as the current fee simple provider, what was the other requirement?
The fee simple would have no objection. In other words, the person that's selling you the property, of course they're going to say, you know, sure, I'll sign the statement saying that I'm going to sell you the property. What this
is it's a backdoor way around the cap. And my underlying and fundamental problem, and this is where I thought you and I shared some commonality of interest early on, is that we both agreed that spending as much money as the state was spending incenting the redevelopment of old property was misplaced economic development investment by the state.
I do not agree
okay.
with that.
Okay, so then why would you tolerate any cap at all?
In the spirit of compromise and moving a bill forward.
So you really do, in a perfect world, would rather have no cap at all on historic preservation?
In a perfect world, I would rather have every way in which we spend dollars, whether through tax credits or a line item appropriations with general revenue dollars, go through a budget process in the House and an appropriation
process. Totally agree,
process
but,
in the Senate.
But that's
in
not
a perfect
okay,
world.
Okay, that and okay. So let's imagine a perfect world minus one, because that's going to be the world we live in. In the world we live in is going to be no appropriations, although I think we might even have votes in the Senate now. We probably, but I do agree with you in the House, it's a non-starter. But if there is no appropriations process, do you think that we ought to cap historic preservation? Or do you think, if it's not in the, that the status quo of unlimited historic preservation is a better public policy for the state?
Senator, there is a cap that I feel can pass the Missouri Senate. That's $150 million.
I'm not talking about that. I'm asking you what you think is the best public policy.
I am answering that. Yes, a cap with that exception. Yes,
but
I am willing to live with that.
You have just described the reason why we need the exception.
And I disagree with you on the timing and the transfer of those small projects and being able to get them to move forward.
We're able to satisfy your concern that the fee simple transfer is the impediment.
And the approval.
And that it's a first in, first out. You would
be comfortable. No, because you can't wait on these projects for whatever. You said that there's $300 million. I mean, what is that, 2, 3, 4 years? I mean, for it to cycle out at $150 million cap? I mean, what we're talking about right now, Senator, is 8 to 15 million, and I've heard it on a wild spread, and I would yield to whatever anyone says on these small projects that, in my opinion, are isolated and outstanding.
Let me ask you this, Senator. Would you think it good public policy, and could you support lowering the cap to $100 million, but creating very robust exceptions for micro? For your micro.
Senator, I'm willing to look at all options, but I cannot agree to anything on the floor without looking to all options.
Yeah, but you've got this fee simple transfer problem. You think the little guys aren't going to get their deals done under 150 cap.
Because
and I'm saying if we have 150 cap,
they can't self-finance.
And you give them their, they don't get prejudiced to DED, we can satisfy you with that, and they get the they get their tax credit without regard to fee transfer, then we've solved your problem, it sounds like.
Say that again.
If we can address this fee simple transfer issue, if they can get their tax credit without regard to the fee simple, and we
without
can
the timing delay associated with $150 million cap.
Well, in other words, so if you have a project of less than $1 million, you have to get it, you have to have a guarantee. You've got to be able to get around the cap for sure, if you're going to support it.
That's where we are.
Okay.
Right.
That, Senator, is the exception that swallows the rule. Because all they need to do, Senator, is break the project down into these smaller little projects, and the cap is a meaningless. And that's
well,
why
I would be happy to outlaw a breakdown of projects. I mean, at one time, the group was talking about layering of projects and everything else. I mean, if you want to revisit all of this,
oh,
I'm happy to revisit
I'd love to. But as you know, we had probably 20 things in the list of reforms. With your appropriation reform being the number one, and you know what, Senator? You were one of the most passionate, articulate spokespeople on behalf of reform, and now we're reduced to this. Let me finish. You were one of the most passionate spokesmen we had about the need to rein this in, and we've gotten to this odd spot now in the last 2 days of session when you feel adamantly that there needs to be an exception to something that would limit the state's overall, and a big exception at that, and that's, to me, a surprising conclusion. Because I had hoped and felt that when we started, because of your heft, and I say this genuinely, you have substantial heft in this legislature, we might actually, and influence in the House, we might actually have a chance for real deal reforms. And now we're down to this, where the reformers, if you will, have basically given up on everything except the MDFB, which nobody seems to care about anymore, and this cap, and you're suggesting that this cap is too restrictive. And that's a surprising result from where I thought, where we started back in January or February.
And let me tell you why it is not a surprising result and why I am consistent. And this will then conclude our first open conversation that we left. As this bill was coupled together and broader tax credit reform was discussed, and as I said in my inquiry with the senator from the second this morning on the unemployment compensation, the way I analyze things, Senator, is I analyze them net positive versus net negative. When we were talking about overall reform of tax credits, I could see net positive. You know what, Senator? I'm surprised that the focus and ire for tax credit reform is historic. Because you know what? Low-income housing tax credits are the worst.
Yeah.
By any objectable standard.
Right.
Why isn't that one the wrath and ire of where we find ourselves
today? Well, actually, yeah, Senator, in my mind, I have wrath and ire for TIF above all else. Because I think TIF is even bigger than, and I was really encouraged to see your vote.
The bill.
I was very, very encouraged to see your vote. And did you see? We had 12 votes for substantial TIF reform. Because I think TIF is even greater. I think you're right. There are historic preservation is without a doubt only one. But I'll tell you,
historic preservation.
I will tell you, Senator,
that is much greater than low income housing.
Historic.
Now
right
I can
now,
get on this floor and quote the Post Dispatch articles why I do not believe
right
we
now,
are visiting low income housing
if,
tax credits.
In my perfect world, if I could do something different from the state, I wouldn't say that the major problem in the state is we have a lot of empty buildings that need to be redeveloped.
I think if we look at
the problems facing the state, and we polled 1,000 people from all over the state, and we asked them what is the number one public policy challenge of the state, I think redeveloping abandoned property or old buildings, a lot of them, it's not even abandoned. Redeveloping buildings that are, I think it's 50 years or older, is not anywhere near even the top probably 40 priorities of the people in the state, and yet we spend a boatload of money on it. And so what's so disheartening to me is that we are now have an opportunity, we're not even really limiting the overall the economic development pie, but we're simply saying we're going to spend less of it on redeveloping old buildings, which I think probably most of us in here, if we didn't have the political pressures on us, we'd probably say, you know what? Yeah, it's great to see an old building redeveloped, but that's nowhere near at the top of the list.
Number one, there is no political pressure for my position.
There's,
it is.
But, Senator, you understand direction. That there is immense political pressure in the hallways on those who would restrict the flow of this tax credit, because you've spoken eloquently. He who is on the government tit does not want knocked off.
I don't think I ever said that.
Well, I do you believe that?
What's that?
Do you believe that those that receive benefit from the government don't give it up easily?
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I
and
just,
so
I just didn't
we
use
had
your language.
No, I'm using the language, and it's probably for your sensitive ears a little too robust, a little too coarse. But it's the truth. And what's happened here is that there are recipients of government preferential tax treatment that are thrilled today because you're battling on their behalf. That's the bottom line. That's where we are. Now, Senator, you know what?
I have no problem with that. All I am saying, to finish our first conversation that we haven't, and I don't know
that these conversations that we have, which we have been ongoing between us for several years now, I think I'm coming to understand that you really, your feelings about tax credits, and this is fair because really it puts you in the majority position in this House. You have different opinion. I think your view in general, tax credits in general, I misunderstood it. And that it's not where I am. Which is quite right, because most of the Senate is not where I am. And I think most of the Senate is probably with you in your support of making sure that we remain pretty generous with historic preservation.
I would say, Senator, where I am as it relates to tax credits is I believe tax credits, if it has a proven return on investment, and we can show that through a REMI model exchange or some other type of economic analysis that's there, it is a worthy partnership for the state to consider. Why am I a fan of tax credits? Simply this way. I think it is better and more effective than a government handout because the recipient of the tax credit has skin in the game, too.
Now, there is where you and I disagree.
Okay.
Because if you receive preferential tax treatment, if you don't have to pay a tax that everybody else has to pay, you are the recipient of a government handout. A dollar of tax that you don't have to pay is the same thing as a dollar that you get from the government. So I don't see, and that's our problem. That's our fundamental difference, is that the people who are recipients of preferential tax treatment, everybody has to pay the same tax.
Like
and it's
lawyers.
Not offered. Let me
like
tell you, lawyers are a perfect example of
an industry.
Because
we don't pay sales tax on our services.
But it's also a perfect example of an industry that would be radically different if full competition were allowed to take place. So that's a perfect example where the government has interfered with the marketplace and artificially kept lawyers' rates higher than they would otherwise
be. Well, but we don't have to pay sales tax on services.
But, Senator, you and I have a fundamental disagreement if you view the recipient of a tax credit or any other break that's specific to you or a small group that others that you compete with don't have to pay. You are no different than the welfare mom who receives her dollar bill of transfer payment.
And let me tell you why I disagree with that. I would concur with you in a perfect world where we did not have to compete with other states that are doing this. But just like in an arms race, I do not believe the USA should unilaterally disarm against Russia in the Cold War. Nor do I believe we should unilaterally disarm.
But, Senator, I do remember.
Or Illinois.
I also
or
remember.
Or others.
I agree, and that's the typical argument that sallied forth in defense of, you know, ever increasing tax credits.
I do not believe ever increasing them.
But no,
as
I'm not saying.
Said,
I mean, but that's,
making sure there is a proven return.
But that's what I hear in the hallways all the time. And you and I had discussions about the antidote for that. And the antidote for that is you take the $700 million and increasing tax credits, take every last one of them off the books, and instead you give a per employee benefit to every employer in this state, and so you don't government doesn't come in and pick a winner or a loser. Here's our problem.
So
we
why
isn't really,
that in this bill?
Yeah,
I mean, why are all of these great ideas reduced now, not to tax credit reform?
For the same reason. For the same
hold
reason.
Hold on, just let me finish. In all candidates, tax credit reform, this is just redistribution of the historic preservation program. This is redistribution of a program. For whatever reason, a vocal, connected minority within this body has been able to say, this particular time, at this particular stage, in this particular General Assembly, what we are defining as tax credit reform is redistribution of the historic preservation program. It's not reform.
Do I think that we need to spend less money incenting people to redevelop old buildings? Absolutely, Senator. You are so right. And for the same reason that you cannot and you and I cannot get the appropriations language in, you know good and well that all these folks that you and I have been talking with would never, ever allow the elimination of $700 billion of tax credits and instead going to every employer in the state. That's not politically possible.
Well,
so
Senator,
to criticize me for
Senator,
that not being in this bill, I would say to you, Senator, where is your amendment to put your and my beloved appropriations language into this bill?
They're coming.
Great. I look forward to it. I'm going to sit down, and you'll need to talk to the Senator from the 4th. Or whatever,
and
because
one of
I'm
things.
Really, I need to move out of the chamber and work on something else.
Here's,
but I appreciate the conversation.
Here's one other
you
thing,
get the last
just
comment.
So you know. Here's one other thing, just so you know. As it related, where we are at, I have now heard in discussions with the senator from 26 that in order to get Angel and R&D tax credits in here, he all of a sudden is willing to take subject to appropriation. So, Senator, my question to you is, why couldn't you have held strong on the subject to appropriation and chosen that as the ballyhoo, the guidon of charge?
Because, Senator, listen to me. I asked you multiple times, Senator, I said to you, stand strong on appropriations language.
But you weren't there.
And you said, Senator, you said, and this is the part
there.
That baffles me, because you and the House work remarkably well together, and you said, no, they won't take it. It's politically impossible to get appropriations language. If you offer the amendment, count me in. I think it's a brilliant idea. Put subject to appropriations language in. If you can, using your heft with the House, make that happen, I am with you. It's not
Senator,
too late. Let's go.
Senator, great. When I look over my shoulder and I'm the only one standing on this floor advocating for it, will you be there?
I'm with you. Count me in. Appropriations, subject to appropriations. Let's put it in. Let's go. I'm with you. I make a public commitment right now.
Where we're at right now, this bill will not leave this chamber until subject to appropriations.
No, I'm telling you, if you can get it in, I'm with you. I'm with you to
get it in.
No, I'm with you. Let's go. Let's put subject to appropriations in this bill. Come on. Let's give it a try.
If,
you're the
if
author
we
of
can.
It.
If
you,
we can.
Senator,
if we can.
You are the
you
author.
At?
You are the author of this bill.
If we can't, where are you at?
I am right here where the draft is now. I'm not voting for this draft. I'm not voting for this draft.
I understand.
And, Senator,
I understand.
You abandoned the field on appropriations.
I understand.
And you abandoned the field on all these other reforms. And I hated to see you go, because when you left the field, the reform effort began to tank. You left the field, and doggone it, it'll be. I hope we'll have you back.
The reform, Senator, ended. Are you ending our inquiry?
I am ending our inquiry.
You're ending our inquiry at that point.
Senator from Jasper, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire the Senator from Buchanan.
Does the Senator from Buchanan yield?
Sergeant of Arms is looking for the senator from Buchanan. Senator from Jasper.
In the absence of the senator from Buchanan, I'd like to inquire the senator from the 8th briefly.
Does the senator from the 8th yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, there was some discussion earlier about use of certain words. And interestingly, there was a reliance on Blackberries as a source of information, sort of. Recalls discussions about laptops on the Senate floor and that sort of thing.
Well, actually, I think the senator from Cape Girardeau had a copy of Webster's Dictionary.
Well, the reality is that the words cited here are not standard words. And while non-standard words are sometimes printed in dictionaries, that does not make them standard. Let me read you specifically about the word irregardless, for instance. Let me find it here. Irregardless, adverb, a non-standard word used in place of the proper regardless. Irregardless is a double negative, is never acceptable, except when the intent is clearly humorous. That's one example.
I would actually...
Now, I would say that just as Wikipedia is not a real encyclopedia, but is a collection of the thoughts of various people, so I would suggest that dictionary.com is not a lexicon to be used as formative for legislation in the Missouri Senate. Interestingly, I have several dictionaries here. One may be more important than the others. This particular dictionary is used in the engrossing and enrolling room. And you know, regardless of what may be on dictionary.com, they're not going to find the word incentivize when they look for it. And they're going to seek to strike it as a non-standard word. And now I've got to confess, we've been correcting people with the word incent, which is also a non-standard word. The actual verb for incentive happens to be incite.
Whoa, but there could be great confusion because incite has another word, or another meaning.
It has other meanings, but the verb, the standard verb for incentive is, in fact, incite. It's not incentivize, it's not incent. And now, the reason I rise on this, and the reason I was going to, and will shortly inquire the senator from Buchanan, there was a book written in 1968 by Andy Rooney called The Strange Case of the English Language. Have you heard of it?
I have not.
That book had the premise that there's a rather casual degradation of English that is taking on increased speed. And he suggested that if we stand by idly and watch English words lose their meaning, that eventually, documents lose their foundation. He was suggesting, for instance, that words like Congress shall make no law affecting an establishment of religion or interfering with the free exercise thereof might be interpreted someday by a Supreme Court to mean you actually can't pray in public places because words would have lost their core meaning. And he suggested that people in the public arena should vigilantly defend standard formation in the English language.
Senator, let me ask you a question. Do you read a version of the Bible other than the King James Version?
I read several versions of the Bible, but the King James is one I always refer to in that mix.
Do you believe that the English that is used in translations other than the King James is acceptable for use?
I believe it is acceptable. I mean, in my own preference is that there was a 1973, actually Roman Catholic version called the New American Standard that I believe is the best translation going back to the original text.
Do you think that somebody standing in the House of Commons in the year that the King James Version was written could have made the same speech that you're making right now, arguing that this form of speaking English is the only acceptable form?
No, that you're missing the point here.
No, I want you to understand this point. A language is used to express ideas and thoughts. It's constantly changing. At first, as it makes a change in a certain direction, the words that are used are not considered acceptable. But that language has to adapt. There is now something called email. 25 years ago, there was no word for email. So if you would have said that and looked it up in the dictionary, it would not have been correct to use it. And so my point to you is that a wooden focus upon locking a language in at a certain date and place will make a language less useful to the people that must resort to it to communicate ideas. Now, I don't think that we should spend lots of time talking about this right now.
No, but the point, though, and I don't think you and I are that far from certainly language evolves. My suggestion here is that in a place such as this where the task is to make laws, I don't believe the use of casual, non-standard words is appropriate.
Well, yeah, but would it be appropriate for me in making reference to this economic development bill to say that the tax credit incites people to this or that? Yeah, it would be correct.
It would be correct.
But among the average person that reads the newspaper, if they read that, they would think that I had used the language incorrectly. If instead I had used the word incorrect word, in scent, they would have understood it. Many more people would have understood it. So I think this may highlight exactly the necessity of a language being adaptive to the situation.
Language will adapt and evolve. My point, however, is that when we craft laws, the words should be chosen very carefully, so that they are understood to have the standard meaning of the time in which they're written, so relativist courts cannot later interpret the meaning as subject to change.
Right.
I'm suggesting that's a standard. What you say in conversation is one thing. What we put in law is another.
Good point, well taken. But I don't think you're saying that in this draft of the bill, the word incentivize has been used, or incent has been used, or irregardless has been used. I actually don't care for the word irregardless. The word incent or incentivized, I do. I think it has use. And none of that happens to be in our language. And, in fact, I think Senate Research does a pretty good job of making sure we don't use incorrect language.
I think the topic was brought up in a lighthearted vein, which I acknowledge. And to some extent, this is a rather lighthearted inquiry, but not wholly so, because I think there's an underlying issue here about the fact that words have meaning and should have meaning. And when we are making laws, we should be seeking a constancy in meaning in the choice of words that should make that choice careful.
Yeah, that's good.
With it, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. President.
Senator from Jasper.
I'd like to inquire of the senator from Buchanan very briefly so that
Senator from Buchanan, yield from
the subject at hand.
I do, but
yes,
I find the subject fascinating.
Yeah, well, I know you had an interest in the discussion earlier, and I was just making a point that there's an encyclopedia called Wikipedia, but I wouldn't necessarily rely on it as a source of absolute and valid information, and I wouldn't put dictionary.com in the same category with Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary.
I was quoting Merriam's online, which is the most up-to-date. Can I give you my entire background on this?
Yes,
and
you may
summarize very quickly. And the people at that table will appreciate this. My roommate in college was a journalism major, and he is now the front page editor for the Seattle Times, but a lot of what I know in terms of grammar is a result of him correcting me late at night. He told me one thing that I've always remembered. He says, there are very few I-Z-E words that are correct. Now, if you always remember that, you're in pretty good shape.
But I'd use the word incentivize. He said, nope, that's not correct. So then I started using the word incent. And incent only appears in later versions. And the truly correct word is incite. However, going back to the Senator from the Eighth argument, there are just only a couple things I actually remember from college. But I read a book in an English class by S.I. Hayakawa, who was the former U.S. Senator from California. But before that, he was a great language professor and professor at, I think, San Francisco State or whatever. He wrote a book called Language in Thought and Action. And his argument goes to the Senator from the Eighth argument. The correct version is the version that most aptly gives you the ability to convey the thought that you're, or argument that you're trying to convey. So in that, incentivize is probably not a very good word. Incite is correct, but probably doesn't aptly give you the ability to convey your thought. Incent is probably the best word to convey the thought that you're trying to convey.
I don't disagree with that. My conversation with the Senator from the Eighth went to this point. If you're talking about communicating a message conversationally, I agree completely. However, when we write laws, I believe that we should be very careful to find the best standard term that is least likely to lose its meaning over time and can be re-examined in terms of historic research to try to determine what the original intent of the authors, in fact, was. And I do think this comes into play with a Supreme Court that spends far too little time trying to research the original intent of the writers of the words that have become the law and the Constitution and the foundation for our country. And that's why I'm a little bit sensitive to it.
I appreciate it. I'm glad we had this conversation. And the mere fact that we wasted 10 minutes doing it, there are people out in the hallways getting ready to jump off the third floor. But it's important to me, it's important to you, and it's important to the Senator 8. Thank you,
Mr. President.
Senator from Cape, for purpose to seek recognition.
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire the Senator from Jasper.
Does the Senator from Jasper yield? He does proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Were you trying to make a point?
No, I actually was trying to make a point about the importance of words and their original meaning.
Is ain't a word?
And, pardon?
Is ain't a word?
Ain't is a word. It's not a standard word any more than irregardless is a standard word.
Okay. Should we put... I mean, can I use ain't?
You can use ain't. You can use it regardless.
However,
the dictionary suggests that it should only be used if your intent is humorous.
How about y'all?
I don't believe y'all is a word.
Okay. Y'all is not a word.
I don't believe it is.
So I shouldn't use y'all on the floor.
Y'all is actually two words.
It depends on if you put the
W, or it's a Y, an A, an apostrophe, and two L's. Y'all.
Doesn't the apostrophe make it one word? Is there a space in between it?
I don't know. What's the question?
Well, I was just trying to see if you were actually making a wanted to communicate. I'm trying to see what your point was. I assume your point was directed to me. I wasn't in the
No, it was both. So. It was actually directed to myself, too, because I acknowledged that I have been using one of these non-standard words. I was critical of the word incentivize. And would correct people supplanting that with the word incent, only to discover that the actual verb is incite.
Okay.
And
it,
so
incentivize?
Incentive is the word from which the verb incite derives.
Okay.
We attempt to use the word incentivize or the word incent, and both of them are words, but they're non-standard words. Although incent is closer to standard and in some later publications has been used as a standard substitute.
Okay.
But the actual correct verb is incite. And again, I'm not going to extend it.
I wanted to make
here.
Sure I wasn't missing a point.
No. The reason I made reference to a book written in 1968 by Andy Rooney called The Strange Case of the English Language that talked about the loss of meaning of words in the English language and the introduction of new words and how that really represented...
Who's Andy, the 60 Minutes guy?
Yes.
Okay.
And represented over time a threat of a loss of context for the original intent of writers when the words that they write down over time take on meanings contrary to the meaning that they intended for them to have when the words were written. In a business such as ours, where we're writing laws, that's sort of a dangerous thing. Okay. And my suggestion then is that when we craft legislation here, we should strive to use the best standard word in the formation of those statutes.
Taken into account our times.
Correct.
Okay, because we used to say he, meaning he and she, and now we say he and she.
Correct.
Okay. Fair enough, Senator. I appreciate that, and thank you for the grammatical lesson. You know, my grandmother was an English teacher, and my grandmother, and I have all of the birthday cards, letters I used to send her, circled in red, struck in red, mailed back to me to show that she was an English teacher first, as opposed to my grandmother. So I appreciate the deal. I hope you were not channeling Dorothy Crowell. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the bill? Senator from the fourth, what purpose do you seek recognition?
I have an amendment.
Please send the amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
It has.
Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment 2, offered by Senator Smith to amend Senate Substitute Number 2 for Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 191, page 92, section 253.550, line 16, by inserting immediately after the number, quote, 2010, close quote, the following, quote, for rehabilitations of eligible property with total costs and expenditures of rehabilitation greater than $1,300,000, close quote, and further amend said bill in section, page 93, line 5, by inserting immediately after the word, quote, section, close quote, the following, quote, for rehabilitations of eligible property with total costs less than or equal to $1,300,000 or, close quote.
Senator from the fourth.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the low-dollar micro-deal exemption that the senator from Cape discussed a few minutes ago with the senator from the eighth. This has been in several earlier versions of the substitute, both on the House side and in the Senate side. Essentially, it addresses what the senator from the 8th said at the very beginning of this debate, and I think said eloquently, which is right now the tall hogs, you know, are expert at crowding the small hogs out of the trough. And this amendment is an attempt to make sure that doesn't happen, that the small hogs have a fair chance and don't have to be at the whim of the large developers. The people who are doing rehabs every day when they get home from work don't have to worry about whether or not they're going to come in under a cap. You've got the possibility right now in St. Louis of three or four projects eating up $100 million of this cap, and that could leave out people who don't have a lawyer to write an application, who aren't able to do it in January. I want to make sure that we protect the rehabbers in St. Louis and the small town squares all across the state that have benefited from this. Again, this is there. I thought was a consensus about this over the last couple months as negotiations took place, and I hope that holds today. With that, Mr. President, I renew my motion.
Senator from the fourth has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment 2. Senator from Franklin, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, first of all, I would like for us to stand at ease for a few minutes, and I want to get the senator from the fourth, the senator from Nottoway, and have a discussion here, if we may do that.
So you've made a request to stand at ease?
I would like to stand at ease.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will stand at ease.